go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we are, off and running on the 15th day of July, 2022. For all intents and purposes, we have reached the midpoint of July, 2022. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, multimedia, madcap extravaganza that takes place during the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. All time zones in between, and the great globe round. Hi, I'm Robin. And if you happen to pop by the chat room right now, you will be greeted by early arrivers Anatole and Roger in Oregon and Squeaky and Stockton Larry, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although he is a third stage gut navigator, has not folded space to become man cave. He's also joined in his moderating activities by pinch hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all around great guy, Brother Bishop Steve from Georgia Stan. Steve! Good to see you. Hope you've had a good week. I hope everybody's had a good week. It's, we'll see how things are going to play out this evening. What's on folks' minds? I've got some stuff. You've probably got some stuff. It's Friday on the front porch. If you'd like to be part of the front porch conversation, there should be a button up at headon.live. More on White Rose Society in a moment. There should be a button up at headon.live. You can click it, and it'll carry you over the river and through the trees to the old old holler tree that we sublet from the Keebler Elves, wherein we keep the extraordinary, ordinary round table around which we gather each and every Friday for our little group discussion. Every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and consequently, this program is no different, so we have thanks to send out to our 15th day of the month subscribers. This is that thin part of the month, and, what that means is we say thank you most kindly to David in San Diego and to Jude. Thank you to Lady B. Thank you so much. And thanks to Robert. And thank you to Nagla. Thank you all for being partial sponsors of the program and helping to keep this wounded duck flying through almost two decades of broadcast history, such as it is. Fundraising goal? Well, the fundraising goal is down to $1,203. $1,203. And hopefully we will knock some of that down. I had a note from our bestie Rico in the oh-so-quiescent Berg. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood challenge. Hey, my lovely. Hey, Rico. Today's been so lovely here in the Berg. Clear blue skies, a rarity here. Mid-80s, no humidity. I feel like I'm in heaven. Not almost heaven, like actually heaven. There's a tufted titmouse nest in my next-door neighbor's gutter. Good Lord for little birds. They sure are loud, and they're driving my big boy Maine Coon Buster bonkers. Hey, Buster. Just lovely. So in tribute to this transplendence, what a word, I am proposing a $100 challenge, and I'll kick in another $100 when it's met. Rico says sometimes life ain't so bad, and it's the little things that make it wonderful. It really is when you think about that. You know, like I said, the title of my favorite poem is by Robert Frost, and the title is Happiness Makes Up in Height for What It Lacks in Length, and I think that's just lovely. So hopefully there's somebody with $100 or some two people with 50 or four with 25 or eight with 1250 or 10 at 10, 20 at 5, some combination thereof, and that will get us down to $903. In fact, if Rico's challenge is met, we will be fully funded for an entire day of broadcasting, just not today. Yeah, it would be like, if we get down to four. Yeah, so basically, we're $3 away from having Monday funded, and then if Rico's challenge is met, we will be funded for Tuesday, and we'll only have Wednesday, Thursday, and today to deal with, and that's really awesome because that's somewhere around the bills that remain to be paid right now, and the fact of the matter is I am a little bit... fretful, because I have to travel at the end of the month, because finally I'm going to get, I need to be seen to by my physician, my surgeon, make sure everything's where and what it's supposed to be, and I'll be leaving here on the 30th of July. The appointment is on Monday the 1st, okay? Getting things started, Ron and Raleigh, he is bedeviled by these sorts of things, as am I. I'd like for someone to give me some sort of explanation of the feckless behavior of Joe Biden and the foreign policy establishment of the USA. As I'm writing this, President Biden is in Saudi Arabia, kowtowing to the murderous Mohammed bin Bonesaw regime. Anyone with a functioning brain cell knows that MBS ordered the slaughter of Jamal Khashoggi. While the men that allegedly committed the murder were arrested, Mohammed bin Bonesaw pardoned them. Biden, who claimed he was going to hold MBS to task, and said, I will add, that Mohammed bin Bonesaw was a, and this is his word, pariah, yet he's done jack shit. Yesterday, President Biden was in Israel, another country known for murdering American citizens, talking to interim Prime Minister Lapid about the plans to use force against Iran, a country that we assassinated one of their top generals. Imagine if Iran did that to one of our generals. The drones would be in the air. Joe Biden's following the Trump plan on the JCPOA, an agreement that Trump pulled out of, and the Iranians continued to follow until they realized that Joe Biden wanted to change the deal. Biden wants to have Iran totally disarm. The U.S. seems to believe we can tell a sovereign country how it can defend itself. Israel has hundreds of nukes, the actual number they will not divulge, even to their primary supporter. From the reporting, Biden didn't confront Lapid about the murder of Shireen Abdul Akala. I'm so tired of the bullshit line we're fed about what a great country we are while we continue to arm and support despots and an apartheid government that steals land and murders an occupied people. When are we to stand up and become this country we claim to be, namely, exceptional? Ron and Raleigh. I know. The fact of the matter is, every time an American president, I don't care, Democrat or Republican, goes over there, I sort of put my head in my hands and weep for my nation. And of course, it's all tied to energy. We couldn't give a damn. We don't give a damn. I mean, look back, please. The April Glaspie memo that kicked off the first, Bush War One, when our dear, dear friend and partner in peace, Saddam Hussein, actually asked Mother May I to the U.S. State Department and the Pappy Bush administration, saying, listen, I got a beef with Kuwait. They're slant drilling into our oil reserves, and I'd like to make them stop. And you'll recall the April Glaspie memo. April Glaspie was one of our envoys. The April Glaspie memo said, the United States takes no position in Arab-Arab conflicts. Remember that? And so Saddam Hussein, relying on the words of his partner in peace, the United States of Merca, the greatest country in the history of the world on earth now, today, forever, in the universe under God, attacked Kuwait. Attacked Kuwait. And then we had the, you remember all this history. You remember the propaganda of the Iraqis is throwing precious little babies out in the hospital winders in Kuwait City. Remember that? Because I do. Of course, that turned out to be a tissue of, well, lies. But since when has American foreign policy ever been much grounded on truth, at least in the modern era? Say, Gulf of Tonkin forward. I know. Ron, why do you keep talking about all this ancient history? I mean, it's just history. History's just a thing. I mean, it doesn't have any bearing on the modern... Well, yeah, it does. We've been screwing up in the Middle East since roughly the end of the First World War. And that would be over 100 years ago, and there's very few things about our policy there that we've ever gotten right. Jimmy Carter, for one, stands out because he got the accord signed between Menachem Begin and Anwar Sadat. That cost Anwar Sadat his life. And, pardon me, a little warm back here. And that's about it. We screwed up Iran. I mean, the whole reason Iran's what Iran is because we screwed up and let the CIA go and play Jouer sans frontières in Tehran in the 1950s and overthrew a democratically elected prime minister by the name of Mohammad Mossadegh. But we know this, right? I mean, yeah, no, really, why am I going? Why don't I just do some sort of... hey, you remember... And so every time a United States president goes to the Middle East, I just feel this overwhelming burden of shame. 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 Watching this, the most powerful representative of this country go groveling and belly crawling and kowtowing and bowing and scraping before a guy who's what, grandfather figured out what forks were for? I mean, that's probably an exaggeration and it's unfair. But, no, really. And a fist bump, Joe? Jesus, Joe! Time for that cabinet secretary. Remember, we had to have a Jesus Barack secretary. We need a Jesus Joe. Secretary, fist bump, really? And we could. I mean, does it really matter at all to the United States of America what those people do to each other? I know, those people, an entire region of the planet, that's probably bad form on my part. But the fact of the matter is, there's one thing and one thing only that plays into this. Hydrocarbons. You know, nobody in the world likes the Saudis. I mean, nobody. They're like the Ted Cruz of geopolitics. Nobody likes them because everybody understands that they're despicable. And if the world would get drop-dead serious about renewable green energy, the world could look at Saudi Arabia and say, fuck right off. Oh, I promised Trey I'd watch the F-bombs this evening. Sorry. But wouldn't it be nice? Wouldn't it be nice just to get up every morning and not give a tinker's damn about the Saudis or anybody else in that region? The Iranian people are lovely people. Their leadership is a bunch of theocrats very close akin to the likes of Governor Meemaw K. Ivey of Alabama and Governor Greg Asbot of Texas. I mean, really, the leadership of Iran has more in common with certain American political leaders. Hi, Ron Monkey up to Clantis. And Moscow, well, you know, I started working that little riff the other day. We were talking about the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and, you know, Raphael and Donatello and Leonardo and Michelangelo, and got to thinking about it. And there is a fifth Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle, only, well, you know, there's always a bad one. This one is Machiavellio McConnellio. And he's the most toxic turtle ever created in a lab. But yeah, he's got more in common than with a mullah in Iran than he does with his counterparts in the Senate. Kay Ivey in Alabama has more in common with a mullah in Iran than she does with, say, Governor Kathy Hochul in New York. Governor Greg Aspott has more in common with a mullah in Iran than he does with, say, Governor Jay Inslee up in Washington. And I don't just say this because I don't like them. Make no mistake, I don't like them. There should probably be more people in this world who were within spitting distance of people like Greg Aspott and Kay Ivey. They look good in loogies. But that's not the point. It is the point that they support a theocratic political system that is virtually identical to that of Iran, with the exception of which of the avatar of choice. That's all. So, I get it. And, you know, for a president who is described as being embattled, this don't help. Although maybe he thinks belly crawling around Israel somehow is going to help his reelection efforts. I don't know. I can't imagine how belly crawling around Saudi Arabia is going to improve his reelection efforts in the greater Middle Eastern community of voters in the United States. It's not like Saudi Arabia is any friend to the Palestinians. Bless their hearts, it's kind of hard to find anybody that's a friend of the Palestinians. A technical note. I said I would mention it. Technical note with regard to the White Rose Society. You know, that's WhiteRoseSociety.org is where we have archived this program since its inception. I mean, back in the bad old terrestrial radio days, even. And I don't know exactly how it happened, but somebody hijacked the domain name. And so neither the stream nor the archives at WhiteRoseSociety.org are available at this point. Podbean still is, as long as I don't go over my allotted unlimited uploads. Yeah, it's going to pay for unlimited uploads, and there's still a limit, man. I haven't quite figured out how that mathematics works, but so for those of you who are curious about that, that's the answer. But the stream works at HeadOn.live. And the stream that is picked up at TuneIn by from HeadOn.live still works. And I talked to Ben Birch, and he said that he's working on recovering the domain name. Some asshole maybe they trained a bot to squat on it. I don't know. But anyway, that's the White Rose Society problem. And, well, flying spaghetti monster speed to you, Ben Birch, trying to recover it. But Ron in Raleigh says, oh, okay, hold on. Darlene in Connecticut says, wrong, there's one person that likes the Saudis, Jared Kushner. Well, and don't forget that Nitwit Nero did the sword dance. Very homoerotic culture, the Saudis. deeply closeted, and, you know, all the things that go with that. And he put his hands on the orb, too. Yeah, because they got the orb in Saudi Arabia. And so, thank you. I regret the error, Darlene. But, Ron and Raleigh says, Israel ain't got no hydrocarbons. Why do we give a flying fuck about them? They're just a drain on our treasury. I know people care about the Jewish vote, but even if we say fuck you, they'd still vote for somebody. So let them stand or fall on their own power. I know, and this gets me in trouble every time. But I take the historical position on this. Israel is outre-mer for the 20th and 21st century. The Kingdom of Jerusalem was set up as a European crusader state in something like the 11th century CE and lasted till the, 14th century CE, thereabouts. And it was a useful outpost. There was a religious component to it. You know, taking the Holy Land back from the infidels. We weren't quite that heavy-handed in supporting the Balfour Declaration and all of that. But it has a certain economic value in its place there. Because, it is a constant thorn in the side of the rest of the Middle East. And it prevents, I'm not endorsing this, Ron, but it prevents any particular other state from achieving hegemony. And if you look at our own history, we largely take the history of this country from the history of Great Britain, and the history of Great Britain has been such that they have succeeded. I mean, when you look at the success of the British Empire, it was, in fact, the greatest empire ever known on the entire planet, ever. At its height, the British Empire controlled something like a quarter of the landmass of planet Earth, and nearly a billion of the human beings who existed thereupon. And I say existed, advisedly, because a lot of them weren't living. A lot of historians get all weak in the knees and squishy talking about the British Empire, but it was nothing resembling benevolent. It was a kleptocratic state. The trillions of dollars robbed from India alone will probably never be made up. India, to this day, is raising hell with the British because they would like some of the jewels that are collected in the British crown jewels to be returned because they're stolen property. I mean, that's a fact. I don't care if you get down and bow toward Buckingham Palace five times a day. The British royal family is in possession of stolen property, like any common street punk. It's just that the stolen property is worth a hell of a lot more than a flat-screen TV. So far, Mother England has shown no willingness to give up the said stolen property. Because it could set a bad precedent, you understand. The next thing you know, they might want some of those trillions of dollars back and some sort of reparation for the immiseration of a quarter of the landmass of planet Earth. My goodness gracious, it's intolerable. Nil. Quarter of two, Duke of Ellington, Satchmo of Armstrong. Sorry, Bugs Bunny moment. But that's the model we're based on. And so the British Empire became the British Empire by opposing any kind of European hegemony. If Russia got strong, they opposed Russia. The Netherlands got strong, they opposed the Netherlands. France got strong, they opposed the French. Germans get strong, they opposed the Germans. keep everybody at everybody's throat, and you can steal a lot of shit in the chaos. See how it works? And we kind of do that with Israel. Make sure that there's no... Because the one of those things that has long bothered the great thinkers of American foreign policy was a pan-Arab movement. You know, where the entire Middle East would just be one Arabian, one great big Arab or Muslim state. Think Ottoman Empire. Think about how the British referred to the Ottoman Empire, say, in the 19th century. The Sublime Porte was referred to as the sick man of Europe. And along comes Kemal Ataturk. And, well, that upset the apple cart a little bit. I mean, history has a long flow. And it's interesting to see how precedent affects present. So I think that's a short answer. Israel is Outre-mer for the 20th and 21st centuries. Scott in San Diego, what Ron said, Biden can't even manage to get his own party to stay in line. I can't imagine him exerting much influence over world leaders or Republicans. P.S. The LBJ clip I sent earlier shows what our current problem is. Yes. Yeah, true, but that's a mighty low bar. Lee in New York noting, Biden in the Middle East, at least he was not grasping a glowing spear or dancing with a sword. But the right wing hates a fist bump, but loves what Trump did. I know. Well, I mean, to be fair, I'm kind of not happy with the fist bump either. Thank you, George, for getting us started. Fundraising this evening. There's $75 to go in the Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood Challenge. Thank you, George. Thank you very kindly. Hopefully you'll get some help there, and we'll knock down a whole lot more than a day's worth of funding. That would be tremendously helpful. Scott said, I recently suggested that Biden start channeling his inner LBJ. Here's a late 1963 example of what I was talking about. It runs just under 2 minutes. It's a vivid example of the LBJ treatment and how things got done. Keep in mind, Representative Thomas was a Texas Democrat. If LBJ cracked the whip like this with members of his own party, imagine the tongue lashings the poorly performing GOP got. LBJ was famous for his powers of persuasion, dispensing them with what became known as the Johnson treatment. He used his imposing physical size and intimidating personality to emphasize his point. In this call, LBJ is in full Johnson treatment mode with Representative Albert Thomas, Democrat of Texas, on the receiving end. In this call, with characteristic bluntness, President Johnson berates Representative Albert Thomas, Democrat of Texas, over a clause forcing the president to publicly report to Congress on wheat sales to the Soviet Union and argues that it would resonate poorly with the American public. This is probably going to be enjoyable.
I don't want to debate with you, my friend. I love you, but you know goddamn well when I ask them not to make me notify them publicly so it wouldn't be in the papers.
Well,
you know, I know what I'm doing.
And, frankly,
you know, and we screwed it up. This damn fool Humphrey put that paragraph on. I told Albert to get it off, cut it off.
I think it's your partners over on the Senate side, and the old Otto played ball. He told me he's going to do his damnedest to take it out. Have you got the language in front
of me? Yes, sir. I got it in front of me. Oh. And it oughtn't to be in there, and it's just a damn...
Agency on national in connection with the purchase in the...
That's right,
or and... National except when the president determines that such guarantee would be in the national...
That's interest. All right, period.
And reports each...
No, period. That's the national interest.
But read your language further. Reports each determination.
Why should I want to report to everybody that I screwed a girl? You screwed one last night, but you don't want to report it.
A I wish it did.
Well, you know what I'm talking about. That made it come home to you, didn't it?
Well, it ain't gonna.
Well, don't you think I'm a damned idiot now?
No, of course not. But I don't think it's gonna hamstring you a bit on earth.
It doesn't hamstring me, it just publicizes that I'm pro-Russian, right when Nixon's running against me. That's all it does.
Well, he ain't gonna run, because he ain't gonna wait.
Well, listen, Albert, you and I are buddies now, and you understand politics, and I do too, and I'm telling you that we're working with the Republicans up there 100%.
Well, I'm on your side.
Well, all right. Well, you just don't ever agree that that's a good clause, because you know goddamn well it ain't. Don't try to shit me, because I know better.
Yes, it's big. Well, I've worked with it in the space.
Yeah, you work with it, but you've been working with it under Republican presidents, not under Democrats. When a Democratic president has to report that he makes a determination that it's in his interest to go with Russia, it's not good when you're running for office. Now, you know that, don't you?
Yep. Gone are the days. But then again, I don't know. You get the president you want, what did Donald Rumsfeld say? You go to war with the army you have, not the army that you want. We went to Saudi Arabia, not the president we had, not the president we needed. And I hate to goon on Biden. I've done my very dead level best to stay off his back. Not that it matters. But this is just embarrassing. I mean, what's, and that's the word. Embarrassing. Plain and simple. Embarrassing. And there was one particular story that just kind of crawled all over me. From CNBC, Biden arrives in Saudi Arabia a much diminished president, the kingdom's former intel chief says. During his visit over the weekend, Biden is expected to urge the Saudi government to ramp up oil production in a bid to rein in soaring costs, which in part drove U.S. inflation to a four, yada, yada, yada. Speaking to CNBC's Hadley Gamble on Friday, Prince Turki Al-Faisal said Biden was coming in as a much diminished president compared with when he was inaugurated in January 2021. Wonder, you know, again, that's embarrassed. A much diminished president. God, he wasn't even inaugurated before there was a... this is the United States of America. He hadn't even been inaugurated. And there was and there was a right-wing terrorist putsch against his presidency. Nobody's ever said that. No president has ever had that said about him. Sorry about the pronoun, but they've all been hims. What does that tell us? Thank you. Thank you to Jeremy. Jeremy has now gotten us down to $45 to go on Rico's challenge. Thank you, Jeremy. That's huge. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood challenge. Noisy little tufted titmouse. Is it titmouses or titmice? I don't know. And Ron is gonna butt me all the way to the end of this one. But all the other countries are busy suckling at the American and Russian teat. Who in that benighted region has the wherewithal to claim hegemony? Iran's largest population, and they being Shia, is not going to get anybody else to go along with them. And we're going to make goddamn sure that they don't, because we are water-bowled scared for reasons that don't make a damn lick of sense. That they will export their revolution. And then again, the crown rests lightly on the noble, serene, gracious head of the of Mohammed bin Bonesaw, because he knows for a fact that's why he's the brutal dictator that he is. that any that there's lots of people in Saudi Arabia that would like to give him a haircut below the larynx, as is the custom there. And it's the fact that, and look, you know, Israel didn't say Mother May I to us about the nukes. So we know that they got a hair trigger itch to use them. And, well, trying to get them not to become the second country on Earth ever to nuke a civilian population deliberately, yeah, there might be some value in that. I know, we could use economic pressure, but we could also stomp, snort, jump, turn a circle, and stand on one leg and stick our tongues out, and that wouldn't magically make them give up their nukes either. As Scott pointed out, the British way, white makes right, therefore white makes might, therefore white makes right, even if it's wrong. Yep. Two wrongs don't make a right, but two rights did make an airplane. Some truths are unavoidable. Well, thank you. Thank you, Jude. That's a lovely thing to say. Your latest photo on Twitter is truly lovely, Robin. Not only is your skin smooth and flawless, there is a radiance and warmth presented in your eyes. In my reflecting on this community we share, it means the world to me, and having been connected with individuals who have stepped out, willing to invest in friendship and a commitment to each other's wellness of being. Distant in miles, yet so close to the heart. And when those times arise of major transition, when one is feeling extremely alone, in pain or confused, the offering of an email or phone call can be a lifeline. As we each travel the path before us, may we always be met by at least one wide-open soul who provides a lantern, assisting when we find ourselves in the middle of the night, unable to see that path. In deep regard, Jude. Well, that's what this community's all about. We're all lighting lanterns, aren't we? Thank you, Jude. Yeah, I took that selfie last night while Silent R. Lamar was discoursing on ever so many topics. And got a lot of email about Lamar last night. I kind of felt like, well, it was a little bit like that scene from Animal House. You know, the one where John Belushi starts on, did we quit when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor? Shut up, he's on a roll. But thank you for those kind words. Okay, it is Tit Mice. Lee in New York serving as the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department. It is Tit Mice. More than one titmouse is a Tit Mice. And yes, you can say titmouse on broadcast TV. And the censors can go and pound sand. Well, that's true. As to the British theft, it was just trillions of pounds. Yes, absolutely. I don't know what made me say trillions of dollars. Art of currency knowing. Yeah. All right, Emilio. First cowbell. I once dated a stripper named Hegemony Bigley.
I once dated a stripper named Hegemony Bigley. She was great, and she could drink a lot of water, which is awesome, if you know what I mean. And believe me, you do.
Oh, God. We've had an outbreak of silly on this Friday on the front porch. And then, well, then there was almost hate to say the name. There was Joe Manchin. Had a message early from Darlene in Connecticut today. to see this first thing in the morning. God, I hate him. I'd seen it right before bed last night myself. Headline, Manchin's offer to Dems, take a health care deal or try again later. His move leaves a slimmed-down bill as the only guaranteed option for Democrats who've long hoped for far more expansive legislation. Expansive, not expensive. Take a deal now to lower costs of health care and premiums and prescription drugs, or try to negotiate a larger bill in September that includes climate and tax reform with no guarantee it will pass. He sickens me. The idea that one multimillionaire, I mean, he's not even a billionaire. He's just a little pissant coal broker from West Virginia. But is this is after all, and everything is part of it. Remember, this is the chairman of the Senate Natural Resources Committee, Joe Manchin, who is only chairman of the Senate Natural Resources Committee for one reason. We've been over that. It is not Joe Manchin's fault that Joe Manchin is the chairman of the Senate Natural Resources Committee. No, somebody else gets to wear that sandwich board. I trust we know, we remember. But if anybody ever thought, because I can sit here and say proudly, I did not. I have stood on these walls, as it were, for years, explaining to anybody who would listen that Joe of the Manchin Born would never, and that's never with a capital never, ever, 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 ever support anything to do with substantive legislation to address the global climate change crisis. The burgeoning extinction level event. Because Joe thinks about Joe's money. I hate to even say this because I've said it so many times that we can all probably just say it together. No Manchin has ever done anything for anyone whose name was not Manchin. No Manchin has ever voted for a Democrat whose name wasn't Manchin. But back behind this is a reality. Joe isn't very bright. He knows how to sell coal gob to a power plant. And he didn't even figure that out by himself. That's just who Joe is. All and total. And he will always act in his own best interest. And no one else's. Now he has a son and a daughter. He has grandchildren to dandle upon his knee. But because he's not a very bright man, he actually thinks that his wealth and the generational wealth that he will pass along will somehow keep his children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren, probably got some of those too, up to their eyeballs in Maseratis and riverboat barges unto the 1,000th generation. This is the sign of a man who is not very intelligent. His great-grandchildren are going to breathe mostly the same air we all breathe, unless they move up to some less benighted state. Because down here, behind the cornpone curtain, we are the benighted states of America. where if it'll burn, we'll burn it. If you can drill for it, we'll drill for it. If you can blast for it, we'll blast for it. And devil take the hindmost. And that that applies to Heather Brash and Joey the Fourth. And all the grandchildren, is there a Joey the Fifth? Wouldn't it be funny if his nickname, hey, bring me the Fifth. No, the other Fifth. Sorry. Keep that Fifth in my golf bag in case I see a snake. Ooh, hand me that Canadian club. Never mind. But what's interesting about the whole Joe Manchin thing is that there were more people involved than just Joe Manchin. Because Joe is not the brightest fork in the chandelier, it almost stands to reason he was being run by someone. Well, I have a name for you that you've probably never heard before. I hadn't. Congressman Josh Gottheimer. Gottheimer, mother of pearl. Congressman Josh Gottheimer. You ever heard of this guy? Because I hadn't. But he is apparently one hell of a mischief maker. He is the member of Congress for the 5th District of New Jersey. And before he was a congressperson for the 5th District of New Jersey, he was a corporate strategist for Microsoft and a speechwriter for I did not have sex with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. And he's odious, okay? Let us be abundantly clear about that. Joe Manchin took a great deal of justifiable grief for destroying the Build Back Better bill that would have done so much good for the United States of America. Democrats in the House passed it. And then Democrats in the House only passed it, though, after Josh Gottheimer had succeeded in the House with decoupling the proposal from infrastructure legislation that had bipartisan support. And now Josh Gottheimer is the one who has largely tanked the deal in the Senate, because he got together with a tiny little group of other squishy right-wing Democrats and created a little groundswell to screw up any further progress. If one did not know better, one would think that he was trying to deliberately sabotage this president, a member, ostensibly, of his own party. He's been having discussions with people like Representative Carolyn Bordeaux, a Democrat from Georgia, Ed Case, a Democrat from Hawaii, Tom Suozzi, a Democrat of New York, Susie Lee, a Democrat from Nevada, Dean Phillips, a Democrat from Minnesota, and Mikey Sherrill, a Democrat from New Jersey. All this was reported by Axios. And the conversation that they've been having was to deliberately sabotage a reconciliation package that congressional leaders have spent oh so much time trying to get Joe Manchin to like. Leah Greenberg over at Indivisible said, Gottheimer really is gleefully committing arson all on his own right now. He's trying to create a counteroffer to the Senate reconciliation package that that includes, wait for it,
no new taxes.
Josh Gottheimer likes the Trump tax cuts because they work out great for Josh Gottheimer and his scumbag pals in the financial services sector. So the deal that he is working with these other mugwumps, well, it speaks to the idea of $520 billion in new spending on health and climate, and $627 billion generated from improved Internal Revenue Service enforcement and drug pricing reform. This is at odds with what's being planned. And Greenberg went on to say, Gottheimer is just being a saboteur, totally captured by his financial sector donors, attempting to stop progress by throwing a tantrum. And pointed out that the deal that was in play was rather broadly inclusive. I mean, anytime you include the name of Joe Manchin alongside Progressive Caucus Chair Pramila Jayapal, you know, you got some consensus working there. But Leah Greenberg pointed out he takes his cues from wealthy Wall Streeters who happen to have one of their multiple mansions in his New Jersey district. That's why it makes sense for him to throw sand in the gears of any bill that might make those mansion owners pay their fair share of taxes. And added, he's insulated, Gottheimer is, from the actual political consequences of Democrats having no big legislative wins to run on in November. Because the Wall Streeters are treating him like a vulnerable frontline Democrat who's tapped into the working man's needs, even as he goes about trashing activists and working class communities who've come together to fight for Biden's economic agenda. This is a classic case of, with friends like these, you know, who needs, etc. You can't blame this one on the left or the progressives. And over at the Sunrise Movement, the ED there, Varshini Prakash, said, to be clear, corporate centrists are ruining the party and threatening Democratic seats in 2022. Sunrise and progressives have been fighting to pass Biden's agenda while corporate centrists are actively tanking it. We must ask ourselves why Representative Gottheimer is working so hard to sabotage the party when he knows a climate and jobs bill would not only help communities across the country, but would help Democrats win seats this cycle. But you see, Gottheimer lives in fear not so much of another maggot taking a seat. He can work, hell, he can probably work with Marginal Trailer Queen and Clanny Oakley Boobert. He can probably work with Andy Biggs and Paul Gosar, the demon dentist of the desert, because they all worship at the same shrine, the blood-soaked altar of Holy Prophet. So while it is exceedingly easy to blame Joe Manchin, it's also exceedingly easy to blame the addict. But a lot of the real onus rests upon the shoulders of the guy who stood outside the Hart Senate office building in a trench coat and said, "Hey, Joe, yeah, here, try it. Here, kid, the first one's free." Because Joe likes the same people that Gottheimer likes. And he's providing cover. And so that's how it came to be that Manchin was able to pull the dick job, sorry, that he did. Today, he went on a radio program here in West Virginia with a well-known broadcaster, full-grown man who still goes by the name of Hoppy, and said, "Well, I want to see another month of inflation numbers before we look at any legislation that might increase taxes on poor, suffering billionaires and pump a bunch of money into the energy sector." And he did say to Hoppy that he's not going to stop talking to Chuck Schumer. Lucy never stops holding the football for Charlie Brown either now, does she? But he tanked it, saying, "Come back the 1st of September and pass this legislation if it's a good piece of legislation. If you're on a political deadline and it has to be done in July, the one thing you know you can get done is basically reducing drug prices, letting Medicare negotiate. That saves about $280 billion over 10 years. $28 billion a year. Shit, that's chump change. Take $40 billion of that and extend the Affordable Care Act, the discounts that people were getting. And suffice to say, for everybody, from Pramila Jayapal to everybody else who was working, everybody felt the knives sprouting from betwixt their ribs from where Joe had shivved them. But we have to keep in mind that Josh Gottheimer sharpened the damn blades. You know, that's the thing with a shiv. If you sharpen it enough, you don't know you've been cut until the thing's already deep into the stuff that really hurts. And Hoppy asked him, "Well, what did Schumer say?" And he says, "Are you telling me you won't do the other right now?" I said, "Chuck, it's wrong. It's not prudent to do the other right now." It's never going to be prudent, Jesus jumping Christ. It is never going to be prudent for Joe Manchin to do a damned thing about climate change. Ever. Or any other Manchin, I dare say. Because doing something about climate change doesn't do something for Manchins. Can we please just understand that all the way down to our pretty little toenails? David Roberts, who is a damn fine journalist, good reporter, on Wednesday he went to the Twitter and said, "Gottheimer being a titanic asshole is a good excuse to remind ourselves of the basic shape of Biden's presidency so far, namely, from the second he entered office, progressives have worked to support his agenda, and moderates have fucked him over." And find me a case where that isn't true. I think you'll be looking for a very long time. A long time indeed. So here we are at the top of the hour. I've Phil Robstered away for an hour. Well, if you will kindly connect, we will connect me to the old holler tree. We'll get the Friday on the Front Porch conversation underway. We have $45 to go to meet Rico's Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood challenge. That means a lot. We are $45 away from turning, well, $10 into 30. Not 10, not 20, but 30. And finishing off Monday and Tuesday and desperately working toward funding Wednesday, Thursday, and today. And again, we're at the halfway point of July. Senate Natural Resources Committee, Brother Deacon Asa said earlier, believe me, the way climate change has been on a tear, I'm feeling the burn now. Play on words there. Well, let's see what's the hold up. There we are. Must be a lot of latency in the internet, interweb tubes today. Okay. We've got, okay, I'm trying to see who's in the room, but you there, Sparky?
Yeah, I'm here working on stuff.
Good deal. Working on pottering around the house or?
No, working on the Skype group, getting it going.
Oh, okay. Has another update come through or something?
No. Just the way you got to do, you ring the call.
Oh, okay.
Got to jump through a few hoops to get it going. So that's done. All the hoops are jumped through.
Yeah, well, good.
How am I sounding?
Oh, you sound good. You've got a little bit of room behind you, but overall, pretty good.
Okay. Well, I've had complaints in the Discord group that I'm in.
Oh, you know, the audio comes across differently in Discord. I think it comes across differently in every platform.
Yeah. But I was going to tell you, I've been getting a couple of tomatoes every day now.
Oh, wonderful.
And one of the guys in the Discord group, it's called Lone Wolf. You sent me some Whataburger jalapeno ranch dressing.
Well, I'll bet that's good.
On tomatoes, it is excellent.
Oh, I can imagine.
You slice them up, then you pour a little bit of dip it in that tomato in that. Oh.
Well, now all you need is some Benton's bacon, and you're in BLT heaven.
No. I don't want to talk about the Benton's bacon.
Best bacon on earth?
Not in my book.
Well, I would love to know what the better bacon is.
I don't know. But I don't want to do that bacon again because it stunk up the whole house when I put it in the air fryer.
Oh, yeah, the hickory. Yeah, hickory is perfume in my book. But
I still got 2 packages of it that I haven't even opened.
Maybe you need to fry it outside.
Maybe that's the way to go, I guess. I got a little two-burner gas stove that I use when the power goes off.
Yeah.
Because I can't run the stove when the power's off.
Right.
For the damn PG&E safety shutdowns.
Yeah, to keep from burning down another paradise or something.
Yeah, I guess so, but where I live, there's nothing that's going to burn down, but it's just like, what part of the grid to shut down, I don't know, but so far, so good we haven't had those bad winds yet, but it's hot enough to start a fire, I'll tell you, 104 today.
That's brutal. Yeah, we got up in the 80s today, it was pretty, it was very... very similar to the weather that Rico was describing. Not very humid today. Lovely.
Well, we don't have any humidity to speak of.
Well, I've got a story from the That Didn't Take Long. I've got
the last time it rained.
I've got a story from the That Didn't Take Long department. Apparently, Ivana Trump's 73-year-old remains had not grown cold yet before Nitwit Nero was out there fundraising on her back.
I saw that yesterday.
Yeah, he sent out a fundraising request saying, "I'm very saddened to inform all of those that loved her, of which there are many, that Ivana Trump has passed away at her home in New York City. She never did grow back those hanks of hair that I pulled out of her head."
No, he didn't say that.
"She was a wonderful, beautiful, amazing woman who led a great and inspirational life. Her pride and joy were her 3 children, Donald Jr., Ivanka, and Eric. She was so proud of them as we were all so proud of her. Rest in peace, Ivana." And then they took that all and put it in an email and said, "Donate to save America." Jesus God.
There's always a grift.
The grift never ends.
Yeah, I was thinking about announcing he's going to run for president here real shortly.
I heard that this morning on my filthy morning habit.
Probably before Labor Day, I'd imagine.
Well, and at this point in time, I think he has to because he's reached that point where he's got to do that to maintain the grift.
Yeah.
He also thinks if he runs for president, he can't be charged. That's why he wants to do it.
Well, he's wrong in that regard, unless it's a... Well, yeah. He's legally wrong in that regard. He might not be wrong in that regard in terms of how Merrick Garland, man of gelatin, views protocols and proprieties.
And also, I shared with the same group that Sparky talked about last night. I was horrified to find out, after Ivanka's death, that there's a mountain here in Vermont named J Peak. It's pretty famous for the Northeast. It's probably Vermont's most famous mountain next to Stowe for skiing. And I grew up 20 minutes from that mountain. And evidently, Ivanka got her start teaching skiing on that fucking mountain in the 70s.
That's wild.
Excuse me. Can I go instead of...
Mm-hmm. And well, since we were speaking about Ivana, you did see the rest of the story. Ivana died after she fell down the stairs in cardiac arrest.
I didn't see that part.
I mean, Ivana, watch out for that Hot Wheels car on the stairs. Oh no, there she goes.
Well, the question has to be asked, did she have a heart attack at the top of the stairs and then collapse and fell down the stairs?
Right.
Or did she fall down the stairs and then when she was lying on the floor, the shock gave her the heart attack? I mean, it's a lot of people say, well, I fell down and broke my hip. Well, a whole lot of those, the hip breaks and then you fall down. So the fall did not cause the breakage. It was the breakage caused the fall. So unless you can determine whether she had the heart attack at the top of the stairs or the bottom of the stairs, it's kind of a moot point. She fell down some stairs and she died. Or she died and fell down some stairs. You know, it's how you look at it.
I have a question, legal question.
Oh, ask away, Scott.
I am hoping, my sympathies go out to the Trump family and yada, yada.
Really?
Yada. But I don't think anyone who loses a mother, you know, you give them a grace day, or at least until she's in the ground. But that's not what I was going to bring up. What I'm wondering is, the legal question is, there was a non-disclosure sort of agreement surrounding or connected somehow with their divorce, as I recall, where she wasn't free to speak of her time with Trump. Does that end at death? I mean, is it possibly too much to hope for that there's an unpublished manuscript somewhere and a publisher or ghostwriter waiting in the wings to tell all from the grave? I mean, can you imagine the fun that would be?
Well, I guess she's got money of her own, doesn't she?
Well,
didn't she?
Yeah, I'm sure she did. I don't know what the settlement was because I didn't follow that back when it was happening, but you know that she got a good chunk of change.
And would the non-disclosure agree? Would the non-dis? That's a novel question. That's one of those little things that, like law professors come up with for final exams at the end of the semester.
Well, but it's worth looking at. I mean, you know, she's got stories to tell. If there was some kind of a gag agreement in the divorce paperwork. That was long before he became a public figure in the sense of politics. So
Stop,
I don't know.
Forgive me if I'm wrong.
Huh?
But in the process of that divorce, she's the one that made the initial claim that he used to put a copy of Hitler's diary next to it. And when that settlement went through, she retracted it all and shut up about it.
Yeah, but did she mean it when she did it? Were any of her digits crossed? She made that
retraction. I think looking back on things nowadays, she fucking meant it. But that's not here or there. I was just wondering if you knew that she had retracted it after she was paid off, basically.
Yeah. Well, I know that money had to have changed hands to keep her quiet, even when he was just a, quote, business person. You know, real estate tycoon or whatever he thought he was. But see, another benefit from her passing is, you know, when someone close to you or formerly close to you passes on to the great beyond, your thoughts immediately go, most people, if they're of a certain age, immediately go to their own mortality. And as if Trump didn't have enough trouble. So, that was really, when I heard that she had passed, I said, this opens up a number of possibilities, and none of them seem good for Trump, at least at first glance.
Well, hopefully Donnie Boy felt that, good, that's one less person that can talk about me. I think I'll eat myself 6 double cheeseburgers and get another case of Coke.
Taco salads for everyone.
Today is KFC day, you know, and that stuff is as good as it is. It's certainly not good for you. I limit myself to once every 6 to 8 weeks. And even then, I nibble sparingly. Jeez.
I can't even get KFC anymore.
Popeyes?
Only if I want to drive 25 miles.
Oh, hell, I'd drive 25 miles for Popeyes.
Well, one of the services delivers the KFC here. I forget whether it's food, whatever, or Grubhub, or one of them. And I mean, yeah, you pay the charges. It's a little more expensive that way. But I'd much rather have them come and just hand it to me.
I don't think I've had KFC in 20 years.
My finger looking good, folks.
The KFC that used to be here is now Starbucks.
Are they still letting anybody and everybody use their restroom at your local Starbucks?
I don't know. Never been in there.
Well, the biggest flap right now is 16 Starbucks have closed throughout the United States because of crime in the area, blah, blah, blah. And many of the Starbucks are now, you have to get a code from the front counter to use the restroom instead of the restroom being available for anybody and everybody who walked in.
No, I don't think they'd do that in my town.
What, let everybody use the restroom or put a code on the door?
Let everybody use the restroom. I don't know about no cool code.
Well, at one time, Starbucks...
places in Reading, you have to ask for the key, and they give you a big old one and big old stick things with the key on it.
Well, at one time, Starbucks was claiming that all their Starbucks, anybody could walk in and use the restroom because they wanted to be a good community number, and a lot of the Starbucks are in places that are kind of lacking in public facilities.
Well, there's a whole shitload of stuff right there, you know, in my town where there's McDonald's and all that other stuff right there.
Right there at I-5?
Yeah. Starbucks is right there, too.
Well, what about the Secret Service and how bad is their ass in a ringer over the deleted messaging?
Who knows yet?
I think it's really interesting that they deleted the tweets and text messages and all that after they were told to hang on to them. The timeline on that is very suspicious.
What about the Overstock.com guy, the ex-CEO? He was meeting with the January 6th committee today.
Ooh, that's interesting because he was one of the people in that meeting in the Oval Office.
Yeah. So I think he's trying to cover his ass.
Well, he has long been a right-wing Looney Tunes, long before Trump.
But I think there's a whole lot of Republicans that are, since the January 6th commission comes up with some obscure shit, people are starting to figure out that that commission has a hell of a lot more than what's been advertised so far. And if some people don't get out in front of this, they could find themselves in a serious bucket of hot water. on what they've already got. And they better be careful.
It's a Chinese water torture thing. Drip, 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 and you don't know what the next drip will indicate or whether it's going to fall on you. That's the brilliance of it, the way that they've been just parceling out the information, and they get new information, then they work on that, and then they start parceling that stuff out based on previous testimonies. Brilliant the way they're handling it.
Well, particularly over this Selective Service thing with Pence being removed from the Capitol and what the plans were for Pence and the idea if they could get Pence out of the Capitol, then the Electoral College could not have been solemnized, however you want to say it, and that Pence didn't want to leave because he knew that was coming. And he did, quote, he didn't trust the Secret Service. Bullshit. He knew exactly what the plan was when it came down to that, because that was the final ace in the hole, was to prevent the Electoral College vote be tabulated in the Senate, which I don't know what would happen then, whether it would have automatically gone to the House or what. But he knew damn good and well. And there's also a Democratic congressperson that, once he kind of got some things figured out, texted all his other congresspeople and said, hey, do not leave the Capitol. And the one I saw today was that they had buses coming to the Capitol that actually got to the Capitol with the idea of evacuating all the members of Congress and everything else to probably Andrews. But to get them out from the Capitol, and then the constitutional duty of the Electoral College vote, which has to happen on January 6th, wouldn't have happened. And I guess Trump would have just declared himself dictator or declared martial law or whatever.
Maximum president for life.
Yeah.
He'd be, in terms of dictator, he'd be half right. I don't know.
But remember this, okay? When you're talking about these subpoena situations, I sincerely suspect that that especially with these assholes who won't show up, the things that they are asking for in terms of documents and the like are things they already have. So what they're doing is setting up, at least in theory, or the way it used to work, they're setting up a referral to the Attorney General for obstruction of justice, lying to Congress, you know, any number of political corruption felonies. And so you're right, they've got a lot of stuff out that I suspect there's still a lot of stuff we haven't heard. And Scott, I got to ask you the episode, and I don't want no spoilers, but okay, who's echoing back?
No.
But in Gaslit, the Liddy in prison segment.
Oh, with the rat?
With the rat.
What? Wasn't that brilliant? I mean, didn't you get into the head of G. Gordon himself?
Oh, I... Okay, who's echoing? Well, at any rate, I got to the point where I believed whoever it was that was playing G. Gordon Liddy, that guy was G. Gordon Liddy.
Yeah. Everybody needs to mute who's not speaking. And that should make the echo.
I'm working on it.
Okay, thank you, Sparky. Well, was it Roger who just asked about the missing texts from the devices that the Secret Service
yes.
had? They were iPhones, as I understand it. To me, wouldn't it simply be a matter of contacting the carrier from whom the service is provided? Because you've got to figure that there's Most people ought to know this. You can take stuff off of your device, but nothing ever really goes away when you're talking about the internet or cyberspace or texting. Certainly, it exists in some other place in the form of a backup or something. Because don't carriers need to protect themselves in case some question comes up about the legality of something that's done over their network and using their devices? So I would just simply find out who the provider was and subpoena them and see what relevant.
They may, Scott, that's what I've just said. They may have already done that.
Well, yeah.
When you ask the Secret Service for these texts and they say, oh, the dog ate it, and you're already sitting there and you've got them in your hand, somebody's going to prison.
Yeah. And that really is the object of the exercise, part of it.
I know what you're getting at, but with Apple in particular, part of their system to protect their customers is you have to physically select cloud backup for it to happen. Now, I do realize what you're saying. It does have to go through their servers initially. But unless it's directly said to back up, that's a safety feature for Apple where people are paranoid so that someone can't get their shit.
Yeah, but these are also federal devices that are controlled by federal law. I mean, do you really think if it had been, I mean, and Agent Fred, this is pure speculation, this is a hypothetical. But if this was a situation where someone had been assassinated, do you really think they'd look at the OIG and say the dog ate our texts? This was part of a planned device replacement that just happened to be on the 7th day of January?
Works out pretty well for them.
Nothing would shock me. Or surprise me at this point.
But it seems to raise a whole lot of questions, and the people who are best positioned to answer those questions need to be brought to the panel and put under oath and... let's see what we can find out. I mean, that's the only way it's going to work, because apparently you're not going to get any cooperation from the Secret Service. I think it was better when they were still part of Treasury. At least Treasury's next door. Biden could go through the tunnel and go up the elevator and knock on whoever's in charge's door and say, what the fuck, dude?
It's definitely strange timing, given the two of the bigger stories we have. One of the choking incident, which we know has been somewhat verified by multiple parties, and number two being the fact that Pence knew that if he left, he may not come back any way, shape, or form alive. And they were probably texting about that day.
Well, again, I would be surprised if the OIG doesn't already have it. And that this is a means by which to, this is the play within a play within in Hamlet. Yeah. The means by which I'll catch the conscience of a king. Because, you know, if it's your own personal device, yeah, you set up cloud backup and all of that shit. But I'm pretty sure that the Secret Service has an IT guy or guys. And that by the time the phone gets handed to Agent Thumbfingers, it's already been set up.
Well, I wouldn't doubt that at all. And for a little history, do you remember the Nixon tapes?
Yeah, Rosemary. I mean, this is the 18 minutes. This is Rosemary Woods.
But yeah. do you know who was in charge of setting that system up at the insistence of Haldeman and Alexander Butterfield?
It was the
technical division of the United States Secret Service. Certainly there's a technical division of the United States Secret Service still in existence by some name in some form. Find out who heads that up and bring his ass up to the hill. See, this is where I wish I was still on speaking terms with my brother who was in the Secret Service. I don't know what he would tell me.
I'd tell you you're a commie.
Well, well, Gamora, no, I don't even go down that road. But the thing is, without meaning to, in previous conversations, when we had conversations, I read between the lines and picked up some stuff so that he didn't directly tell me. I just deduced it from, sometimes you can get more from what someone doesn't say than from what they do say based on your questions. Anyway, but yeah, I mean, find out who's in charge of issuing equipment and ordering equipment and making change in commitment equipment providers. I mean, there are answers to be had, but you've got to bring the warm body up in front of the panel and ask the right questions. And you may well be right, Robin, about they've already got it. They're just...
Well, it's certainly wishful thinking on my part. I freely acknowledge that.
But there's nothing wrong with them making a discernment of as to who is being upfront with them and who's bullshitting them. Because that alone will tell you, that will help you in your choice of witnesses.
Well, I guess we get prime time again next week.
Yeah, well, Thursday, I think it is. Is it Tuesday or Thursday? I can't keep track.
Don't know. Oh, I have another story.
Thursday now.
Pardon?
Thursday is what I keep hearing.
Okay. And is this supposed to be the last one?
No.
Because I'd heard some rumblings along those lines.
Door open.
Good, good. Well, I do have a story with a bit of a follow-up. Remember, we talked about the wild-eyed maggot attorney general of Talibandiana, Todd Rokita, who went running around on Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, and the like, and talking about how, what was the claim? On Fox News, Todd Rokita said of the doctor who took care of the 10-year-old child from Ohio. We have this abortion activist acting as a doctor with a history of failing to report, so we're gathering the information, we're gathering the evidence as we speak, and we're going to fight this to the end, including looking at her licensure if she failed to report. What does that even mean, fight this to the end? They're going to put the fetus back in the 10-year-old? Fucking maggots. Well, it turns out that all the paperwork was in order. She had reported in a timely fashion. She knows damned well what she's doing, and she knows where she's doing it. So the doctor lawyered up with Kathleen Delaney of Delaney & Delaney LLC, who they promptly banged out a nasty gram to the Attorney General of the state of Talibandiana. And this, you know, That means that you're pretty much not scared of the maggot. Please immediately cease and desist making any false or misleading statements about Dr. Bernard. Your false and defamatory statements to Fox News on July 13, 2022, cast Dr. Bernard in a false light and allege misconduct in her profession. Even after the release of the TPR through open record requests, confirming Dr. Bernard fully complied with all applicable reporting laws, your subsequent statements to local and national news sources on July 14, 2022, further cast Dr. Bernard in a false light and mislead consumers and patients. We are especially concerned that given the controversial political context of the statements, such inflammatory accusations have the potential to incite harassment or violence from the public, which could prevent Dr. Bernard, an Indiana licensed physician, from providing care to her patients safely. That's a damn good job of putting somebody on notice.
P.S. So knock it off, numbnuts. No, I know a responsible law firm is not.
No, that's all legalese for knock it off, you maggot piece of shit.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, just for a point of clarification, in that business about LBJ that I contributed today, I am not sending out an ode to LBJ. I mean, for as many strengths and good things he did, he certainly had weaknesses and bad things that he did. for good things that he didn't do. But God damn it, I mean, and this is an ongoing thing with me, it just troubles me that it's not enough, that in Biden's mind, it's not enough to get the White House. Once you're there, that's where the fun begins, and that's where the job kicks in. And all I was pointing out was the fact that once upon a time, there were presidents who actually did good shit, or at least made their impressions known to members of their own party in the House and Senate, and basically called them on the carpet when they were doing things that weren't helping him. But we certainly don't have an LBJ in the Oval Office today, and maybe we shouldn't have. But it's not enough to be a placeholder. It's not enough to be a sane person in a place of responsibility. Once you're there, you've got to get shit done and crack the whip if you need to, if that still works. That was the thing that you raised, Robin. That may not be a technique that works anymore because they don't answer to to their president, even if he's of their own party. They answer to the corporate people who are paying their way up there on the Hill. Our side and their side both, I might add. But anyway, I want to make that clear that I wasn't saying that LBJ was the end-all and be-all, but by God, he got some good shit done, which ever since they've tried to undo.
Yeah.
They're on the other side.
So, yeah, and, you know, I had a note from Lady B that kind of speaks to all of this, you know, Biden. How far are we from the word malaise that was used to torpedo Jimmy Carter? At what point does malaise get trotted out? But Lady B asked, do you think that Biden really thinks lowering oil prices will give him a boost in popularity? Even if he managed to get gas to $3.50 a gallon, that doesn't mean Dems will feel he's the best candidate. He's coming across as weak from us hardcore progressives, and with Roe versus Wade being overturned and red states forcing 10-year-olds to carry their rapist babies doesn't help. I think I made a reference to LBJ's strong-arm tactics a few emails back. He made history by being a Southern-born president who pushed for the passage of civil rights legislation. He said the Democrats would lose the South for a generation, and he was more than right. But every right people have enjoyed afterwards, from the right to be gay and serve in the military to gay marriage, was all because of that. I don't know why Joe's advisors thought going over and sucking up to the Saudis was a good idea. The optics are terrible, and we're sucking up to them because we need better access to that sweet, sweet spoon and lighter of heroin that we call oil. Yes, we have Tesla and Chevy Bolts, but we don't have the infrastructure and costs aren't low enough for the average proverbial Joe to buy them anyway. We could be in a better place in terms of greener technology, but we're not going to be because folks like Joe Manchin and the rest of the Republican Party don't give a shit what happens to this planet as long as they can continue to summer at Martha's Vineyard and eat at Nobu. Nice Nobu reference. Our planet's on fire. COVID is poised to kill hundreds of thousands more people starting this fall, but at least we'll have cheap gas. To quote the San Diego radio prophet Scott, we're all screwed, Robin. Yay. P.S. temperature in my car, but at least it's a dry heat. And, yeah, 93 degrees Fahrenheit. Ow. Yeah. And Darlene, Connecticut, with a note, we must assume the worst with the Secret Service. And what about the agent who was sent home the other day from Biden's trip? Was it belligerent behavior in a bar? Really? The Secret Service may actually be the SS in some respects. I hope Biden keeps close only those agents he trusts implicitly. See, I never see any of this the Secret Service stuff without remembering that there had to be a house cleaning, or at least a little bit of one, or at least a reprimand or slap on the wrist. Do you remember right before or right as Barack Obama was first taking office in 2009, the Secret Service got in some deep shit? Because it turned out that a bunch of Secret Service agents, you know, on his detail, were passing around N-word jokes via email. Do we remember that?
Yeah, I seem to recall that, Robin. Yeah, I do.
Yeah, your memory is not faulty, Scott. We have so much entrenched disgusting behavior in our government that it's well. obviously, I've used a lot of airtime talking about it, and I've been talking about it. We've been talking about it long before it caught anybody's eye among the multimillionaire broadcast class.
And earlier in the week, when you were talking about the Nazis in the military or fascists or whatever the fuck they were, you can think of the Secret Service, although it's a smaller organization. And this is not to say anything bad about the people who go in and punch the clock and do their job without regard to who the president and his relatives are. These are the people who understand what the job is about, and you do it, not because you like the person occupying the office, because it's the job, okay? And it's scary when the protectors are disdainful of the protectee or protectees even. I'm sure that when the Obamas were in the White House, there were people on the detail that didn't care much for him, didn't care much for Michelle, didn't care much for the mother-in-law, Mrs. Robinson, didn't care much for the children, didn't care much for the waterproof dog. I don't know what kind of dog that was, but he had to have a special dog that turned out to be a waterproof dog or something, a water poodle or something. But you get what I mean when you've got the people
Portuguese water dog, I think.
Okay, thank you. But when you've got the people around you who are, quote, the protectors, who are disdainful of the protectees, well, that could be a place for trouble to break out. Getting back to what I, my basic point, it's not unlike the military. No matter how hard you try to root them out, if you try to root them out, there's going to be bad apples in whatever group you're talking about. And the Secret Service is no exception. If they're erasing texts, which are important to hang on to, not only for history, but for legal reasons and progress in the country reasons and finding out the truth reasons. I mean, Jesus. I want to get my brother on. He could tell you.
I understand what you're getting at. I do.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, and by the way, a little announcement. I heard from Tamara, your neighbor, who said, I want to start off the donations with a $20 pledge. This was earlier. By mail, like a cavewoman. Inspired by my neighbor Scott's generosity and by Scary Jerry's broke-ass under-the-table donation. Hugs and kisses. Hugs and kisses back, Tamara. So, if $20 comes in, Tamara will double it, and that will get us down to $5 to go on Rico's challenge, which is, when we get up in the north of $1,000 neighborhood, that means stuff is not being paid. And that makes it hard to do this, hard to keep this going. So that'd get us down to $900 today, yesterday, and Wednesday in terms of funding. And Lord, I wish this really was the big time radio dollars. It is not. But
well, I could give a few words about the Bose acoustic wave radio.
No, I don't want it. No. And no Buy Gold Now ads and no stupid beats either.
Wait a minute. Gold's never went to zero.
Steve!
Steve?
Robin, what's up?
How are you?
I'm okay, man. It's been an eventful month. Very eventful.
How so? I mean, can you share?
Yeah. In fact, I
Was there any call the guy involved?
No. This was serious health issues, and kind of as a PSA, I need to share this. So I'm begging everybody in the Horn family, get fully vaxxed. Fully vaxxed. Just don't get the two shots and think, oh, I'm done with it. Get every booster you can. Get, you know, your two Modernas and then your two boosters after that. I'm going to tell you why. About two to three weeks ago, Karen tested positive for COVID, but she was asymptomatic. And I never got it. And after much research and talking to many, many doctors, if you're fully vaccinated, you're less likely to shed the virus. So you're not only doing yourself a favor by being vaccinated, you're doing your loved ones a favor, too. I should have gotten it because we eat off the same plate. And I still can't wrap my head around why I didn't get it. I'm past the incubation period. I've taken more tests than a rabbit, so I'm kind of in the clear. But, you know, the only thing that I could say that saved me was the vaccinations.
Probably, yeah. And they're, and you're absolutely right. They're saying, they're, you know, BA4 and BA5 are no fun.
No.
I know it kicked Malloy's ass.
She did get strep, Robin. Strep, and I had a vicious sinus infection, which, and I didn't know this, you know, this is a fun factoid. A strep can get up in your sinuses where they can't swab, and that's why they always treat sinus infections as if, and they're always just throwing Z-packs at sinus infections. And I didn't know that until I talked to a couple of doctors. So there's that, too. So I did get a sinus infection, and she had strep. And this weekend, we got to disinfect the whole house. So that's what we're going to be doing. But other than that, life has been just grand, peachy keen. Been working every day, processing claims, and other than that. But bottom line, folks, get vaccinated all that you can. You might save your own life. You might save the life of one of your loved ones. And, you know, I'm going to step off my soapbox now.
Well, not only that, Steve, but be prepared in a few months from now, because the current vaccines don't address the current versions of the virus, the BA4 and 5.
Right. There's one coming out in October, Scott, that I highly recommend getting. If they told me I could come get it tomorrow, I would be standing in line at the Kroger or the Publix or the Walmart or wherever.
What you're saying is has validity. Get your two original vaccine shots. Get your two boosters. And be prepared to stand in line again for when the new version comes out, because that's the only one of the only things we're going to be able to do to keep the infection rate.
Right, and we need, and I need to reiterate what Make West Virginia great big old Governor Jim Justice said so eloquently previously, and it won't make you grow antlers.
It doesn't. The only thing it's going to keep you doing is getting sick, viciously sick, or getting your loved ones sick. Now, there's always that one-off. You could be fully vaxxed, I guess, and one in a million, like hitting the unlucky lottery and end up in the hospital. But more likely than not, that's not going to happen to you if you're fully vaxxed. Would you agree with that, Robin, or am I talking off the
top? No, you're absolutely right.
But I've lived through this, you know. And, you know, people that know me, especially Horn family, they know that I wouldn't even throw this out there if there wasn't validity behind it. So please, just get it. Just do it. The life you save could be your own or your best friend.
Well, exactly. And, I mean, what have you heard, Steve? You said, you know, there's going to be another vaccine in the fall. What?
There's, like Scott was saying, there's going to be a vaccine in the fall, come around October, that's going to be specific to this new variant. What is it, the BA4 and 5? They're tailor-making it to address that specifically.
Because apparently
that comes out.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Robin, I interrupted.
No, please, go ahead.
Until that comes out, the best, all we have right now, our best defenses is just to be fully vaxxed. I wouldn't sit around and wait on this thing to come out in October either. If you're on shot number 3, go get shot number 4. Get it. Just do it.
And don't stop wearing your mask. People give me looks in stores, and don't give a fuck.
And Scott, what you're doing is you're reinforcing, you know, you're reinforcing good behavior when you wear a mask. Please keep wearing your mask. You're telling other people, hey, it's not strange to do this. Look at me. I'm wearing it. Why aren't you?
Well, there you go. I mean, you've got to be an example to the people who are either too dumb or ignorant to do the right thing on behalf of not only themselves.
Well, and at this point, even beyond being an example, Scott, you've got to protect yourself against the ignorant.
Exactly.
I mean, I don't know what it's like in San Diego, but here you're as likely to see them walking around with one finger up to the knuckle up their nose and another finger up to the knuckle up their butt.
Well, that's Hillcrest. You don't see that everywhere. But yeah, I get what you're saying. And I don't know, Robin, what San Diego's doing, because by and large, I don't go out anywhere near as much as I used to, and I didn't go out much then. I ride the bus a couple of times a month, and I don't know whether they've lifted the mask requirement, but I've seen people on the bus not wearing masks. And that's outrageous. I mean, because we are not out of the woods. We can't even see the place marked out of the woods from where we currently are. And it shows every inclination of getting worse with these two variants.
Well, and how many times have you heard, Scott, we may be sick of the mask and the Rona and all that, but it's not sick of us. It's
bingo.
Not
bingo.
Yeah, and for those of you who wander around Reddit, Herman Cain Award is still a going concern over there. There are still stories. Let me take a quick peek.
One day I'm whooping it up on the platform with the president, and the next week I'm all dead like.
999.
There you go.
I mean, I was hospitalized and was on oxygen for a few weeks. Wasn't that serious?
Wasn't that bad. I got to see a pretty nurse or two. Jesus, what's wrong with these people?
Louisiana woman distrusts the government and the vaccine. Her second bout of COVID has her in the hospital, bleeding from her throat.
Good heavens. I know some non-vaxxers that have caught it twice, twice, and the second time wasn't no fun either.
Virginia grandma seems like a very nice person who fell for COVID disinformation. It's awful how easily garbage is spread around and taken as truth. Virginia grandma reposted a tweet from, you remember Tommy Lauren, I don't know, Aryan Youth Barbie. Tommy Lauren, with her blue check mark, tweeted, "Control, oppression, vax, infringements, Democrats. Wake up, it's never been about health and safety. It's a pilot program for communism steeped in control, compliance, and big government."
Well, if Marx or Lenin or Chairman
do the right thing, man.
If Marx or Lenin or Chairman Mao himself were upright and above ground in today's world, they would be fully vaxxed. They'd show you their card, because you can be crazy on one segment of your approach in life, but the self-preservation thing kicks in, doesn't it? I mean, it ought to. And what is with these people that they are just irretrievably stupid? And they've got to know when they see people dying around them that there is some validity to what the Surgeon General and the CDC and the rest of them are trying to tell them. And to me, I've never done a lot of gambling, and I would certainly never do high-stakes gambling. But in a situation like this, it's the ultimate crapshoot. If you're willing to believe your bucket of disinformation as being the accurate and real truth of the matter, you are literally betting your life, or at least your immediate future health-wise, on whether you're right or wrong. And that is a big fucking crapshoot when it comes down, your life is on the line.
You're exactly right, Scott.
Yeah, Scott, and let's remember, this is like when Todd and I talk about Venn diagrams and overlap.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here's a guy from South Carolina, Stan, not Todd, not David, not any of our friends. South Carolina man enjoyed a good COVID joke. He found his time in the ICU to be not as much fun. Naturally, he had posted a meme of the Dos Equis guy. I don't always chant at games, but when I do, it's "Let's go, Brandon."
Let's speak of pragmatic truth, Robin. If Karen and I were those ignorant SOBs, those vaccine deniers, there's a good chance we could both be dead.
Yeah, I mean it's a hell of a thing to ponder.
And turn the lights out. You know, once you're gone, ain't no coming back.
The local Safeway store here in Eugene that the youngest boy works at, he was double vaxxed, boosted the whole nine yards, and tested positive, was out of work for a week. But Safeway, if you, as an employee, if you get COVID, you get time off with pay that doesn't count against anything. Because that's how they're being nice to their employees that they're underpaying. However, just after he came down with his dose, his one dose of COVID, all the employees at Safeway are now wearing masks 100% of the time. It doesn't matter if you're in the butcher shop, the deli, stacking the produce shelves, or a cashier. 100% of the employees are masked 100% of the time inside the store.
Well, I mean, how is that not just, I mean, and Steve, this is kind of your bailiwick, how is that not just good risk management?
To me, it's just pragmatic common sense. Believe in science.
And I don't know about anywhere else, but all medical facilities here in Oregon are still 100% masked, whether it be a doctor's office, hospital, VA, it's 100% masked. The VA's got a guy standing there at the door. They used to have one, you know, do you have any guns on you kind of security. But now there are two. One guy is there, and it will hand you a mask if you're not wearing the right kind. And then, of course, there's the standard security guard. So,
well,
yeah, it's still masking up. Now, not this Saturday, not tomorrow, but next week. I'm putting in 4 hours sitting at the Master Food Preserver booth at the local county fair, and I'm going to be wearing a mask the whole time. It's indoors.
Sure. Well, you know, probably in Georgia, maybe 5 to 10% of folks wear a mask, and we're going to lead by example. I don't care if we get ridiculed. I don't care if we get called out, because the life we save could be the very ones throwing stones at us, you know. That's okay.
I mean, we're not in charge of who throws the stones, right, Steve?
Nope. Nope. And they're too ignorant to know that, you know, we could be actually saving their lives. Because even asymptomatic, she was shredding virus. I mean, according to the home test, for over 2 weeks.
And as if we didn't, to widen the playing field here, as if we didn't need another reason to keep the House and the Senate in the hands of Democrats. Now, I know that I believe the last time I looked, people were still required to be masked in the House office buildings and on the floor. I mean, it was strongly suggested anyway. I don't know that they can make them. But imagine if the Republicans take the House again. What are the masking requirements going to do? And what is the impact of that on people on their side and our side? I don't care as much about what happens to them so much, but I do care that our good people in the House and in the Senate, I don't want to put them at risk. I mean, you've got to look at all of the possibilities. It's not just a matter of politics; it's a matter of preservation and good sense.
Well, Roger, Scott, Robin, correct me if I'm wrong, but when you wear a mask, you're protecting others more so than you're protecting yourself.
Yes, yes. I mean, it's the same principle as wearing pants.
So it's the most.
So you're not, you know, if you're wearing pants and you start peeing, you're going to pee on yourself, just not on anybody else.
That's a hell of an analogy, but very.
Well, it's true.
But it's the most selfless, unselfish thing you can do is wear a mask, because you're looking out for your neighbors.
And I think you've just identified the fundamental difference. They don't give a fuck about their neighbors. They've been told for so long on Fox News, TV, Radio, Rwanda, and all those other places, America is founded on the lone wolf who pulls himself up by his own bootstraps and don't need nobody's help from nobody else.
What if you don't have any boots?
Well, that's where the free market and the entrepreneurial spirit comes in, and you will make you some boots. Out of old banana peels.
Or somebody will donate some to you. To quote Malloy, our dear friend Mike. And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to drag the show down with my, what happened to Karen and I. I thought I need to put it out there, just as a PSA. We can move on to other less.
Oh, you didn't bring anybody down.
You know, I was just trying to. Thought it'd be a good PSA. Please, for God's sakes, get your damn shots. The life you save could be your own or the one that's closest to you, your best friend.
Exactly. And, I mean, I forget where we were the other day, and I'm not telling tales out of school, but some office, and Annette had her mask on, and she went in, and the reception, oh, you don't have to wear those no more. Well, I may not have to, but I'm going to. Okay?
I think too much of you not to. Even though I don't know you, stranger, I think too much of you not to.
I don't know you, kind stranger, but... Yeah, exactly! Oh, and I have good news. Ralph's met Tamara's challenge, so we got $5 to go on Rico's challenge. And then we can start on, this past Wednesday. And we got a little less than an hour to do it in. So, the more the merrier. I'm sorry it's such a slog and such a struggle, but it just is, and it drives me bananas, but here we are.
Oh, a real quick TV viewing tip. I think it's Sunday night on CNN. There's a one-hour documentary. CNN's supposed to report on Steve Bannon. So if you think you've got the intestinal fortitude and strength of mind to watch that, it's worth watching under the rubric of know your enemy. And that, I don't have many enemies in life, but that fellow, he don't have my best interest in mind.
Is that the very same one they were supposed to show before the Ukraine?
No,
they happened.
Crazy Alex that ran a couple of weeks ago. It was pretty good too.
Oh, okay. I bet it was. Bet it was.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of Alex Jones,
Alex Jones.
I got another Jim Dandy here. I mean, I hope Alex and Roger Stone's assholes don't pucker so much that they can feel them banging against the back of their throats. Wait, no, I don't. There is apparently some information out there that Alex Jones's ex has been having a few little chit chats with the January 6th committee. Because, you know, we had that video in the last hearing of Alex bellowing his full, probably steroid-addled head off on January the 5th. She might know something. In point of fact, the report suggests that... Kelly Jones got on Twitter and said, I'm Alex Jones's ex-wife, and I lost my kids for exposing InfoWars even when he was under subsequent federal investigation. I have insider info that I believe is relevant to the January 6th committee hearings. Please share. And hopefully they're chatting with her now. Stay off small aircraft, Kelly.
You talk about the pucker factor after something like that. I imagine when he does pass gas, only dogs can hear it. That's how much of a pucker is going on there. I don't mean to put the program into the cancel your dinner attitude, but... Well, I wish nothing but the worst for old Alex. And you were going to say something about old Roger. Now, there's another one. Roger Stone. I just... Why that person is upright and above ground?
I mean, more foul human being walking the earth than Roger Stone? I mean, anybody got a tattoo of Nixon on their back? You just don't get any more foul than that, do you, Scott?
Well, it's not just the tattoo of Nixon. It's what that mindset represents. I mean, I don't have any tattoos, and I don't know anybody I think highly enough to get a tattoo, you know, in terms of public figure or entertainer or even Gandhi or Martin Luther King or somebody.
Religious guru or Jesus, I mean, Christ or anybody, huh?
But if you ever watch that documentary, Get Me Roger Stone, and I think you said you did, I think it's on Netflix. I'm telling you, that man is a piece of work, and it's a twisted, demented, foul, evil piece of work. And who were his guards on January 6th? Was it the Proud Boys or the Three Percenters or the...
Oath Keepers, I think.
Oh, I knew it had to be one of them.
It was the Oaths.
Yeah. Then what does that say? I mean, and Alex was surrounded by a bunch of hooters and haters. In the footage I've seen of him on that day, he was there. It just boggles the mind, I mean, and doesn't gladden the heart. I mean, to see that there is still plenty to get done and to defend against with these jazzbos, because they are nitwits and knuckle crawler draggers and slimy, and they're, what is that? They're ooky and they're spooky?
Was yes.
The Addams Family? They're everything that you... that kept you under your bed at night as a child, but worse. Ooh, I get the heebie-jeebies when I even think about the likes of them.
Well, speaking of which, oh, God, this is the story that just keeps on getting more disgusting. We now have a photograph of young 26-year-old Gerson Fuentes of Guatemala, who raped a 9-year-old girl at least twice. Telemundo sent a reporter to the home of the child's mother. And, oh, my God. My Spanish is not that sharp, but the caption that I'm reading, I think it translates as breaking news or at this hour. Madre de la niña violada no presenta cargos. And from behind a door, the mother, speaking to the Telemundo reporter, said she wouldn't give her name, and she said, she's my daughter. She's fine. All of this in Spanish. Everything they're saying against Fuentes is a lie. And then she said, no, she did not file the charges against Gerson Fuentes. Somebody else must have. And I'm guessing, I don't know what, Mama is afraid to, is this a matter of fear, or is this a matter of her just being a piece of shit mom? Thoughts? Is maybe she's afraid because, you know, the family will come after her? Or maybe after...
Is this the mother...
This is the mother of the little raped girl. Everything they're saying about her rape, about the little girl's rapist, is a lie. Now, this is one of those cases where you're going to prove it with the DNA. And the DNA is going to be dispositive.
Yeah.
And, of course, being nine, there's no issue of consent, but... I have wondered, and I have not seen information, whether this child is in the home again, where, because, you know, Annette raised the issue with me, and I've heard, and others of my friends have said, how does that happen? And not how does it happen as in, you know, excusing the rapist, but where was Mama? Well, this is Mirka. She's it appears she may be an undocumented immigrant, just like the rapist is. And where's Mama? Trying to earn enough money to stay alive, probably. But Jesus. And then again, the poor child's in Ohio, so you wouldn't want to put the child into the care, custody, and control of the Ohio Child Protective Services.
No, not if you could help it.
Because they'd probably put the poor child in some Jesus-up, sickening Christian foster home re-education camp where she could be tormented and guilted for not having the baby. And maybe, you know, it being a Christian outfit and all, re-raped. I hate this story.
Well, does the article say why she is said? Because, see, that doesn't make any sense unless she's being pressured by someone.
Well, that's what I'm wondering about, because that's where there's just not a hell of a lot of detail.
What was the organization that was interviewing her?
Telemundo.
So that's an NBC entity.
Is it? I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
NBC Universal, well, Comcast?
Yeah, because they'll, if that's their story, then other outlets like MSNBC or NBC News or whatever will probably pick it up and elaborate on the finer points and the details and stuff. But it doesn't speak well of her, even under pressure, to be, you know, giving the your child's attacker, multiple attacker, any kind of a pass or any kind of a attaboy or leave him alone or he was such a quiet kid or whatever. I mean, come on.
Well, you know, Darlene's got a great point. The rapist is the mother's boyfriend and she's protecting him or scared of him or both.
I hadn't thought about that, but you, Darlene, may be right on that count. Well, and it's all going to come out. I mean,
I just wish there was someone, because I don't. I've got this crawling suspicion, like having ants on me, that while you know the right wing is busy using her as a political football and excoriating her in the press. I mean, for God's sakes, Jim Jacketoff Jordan actually got called out by Ted Lieu on the floor of the House. You're going to hear a lot of words from my Republican colleagues, Lou said at the House Judiciary Committee hearing, and all I have to do is give you one example that's devastating to their statements. A 10-year-old girl got raped in Ohio and got pregnant. She could not get an abortion because none of the exceptions in Ohio law would have authorized it. And what did MAGA Republicans do? They smeared her. They said she was lying. And in fact, at least one Republican member of this committee publicly tweeted that she lied and then quietly deleted that tweet when, guess what, her perpetrator was arrested. And then he called on Jim Jacketoff Jordan to apologize, which, of course, Jim Jacketoff Jordan will not do. But the thing is, where are the stories? And maybe I'm just wrong about this. Where are the stories about the efforts being taken to make the child safe? And how do you make the child safe? Can the child be safe in a vicious state like Ohio? I don't think so. The child was barely safe having the procedure in Talibandiana. The child needs to be in a civilized state where Children and Family Services or Child Protective Services are not in a state of total and absolute collapse. And where is that state? And where's the person who will get that child to that state? I mean, I shudder. I'm absolutely horrified at the thought that the poor little girl is back in mama's care, custody, and control.
And what does it say about the nature of our society? I mean, most reputable news organizations, even today, even when it's an adult victim of rape or sexual assault, that person's name and even their situation is not a topic of public discussion, other than to report that an incident occurred. And this, like you say, this poor little girl is being, she must have Rawlings stamped on her because she's become a political football, when that's the very last thing that should ever come to mind as a way to treat this situation. I mean, it's disheartening is what it is, Robin.
Well, it is.
It's sickening, it's disheartening, and people who should know better are not displaying that knowledge. Let's just put it that way.
And from a 10-year-old to an 8-year-old, little boy, 8 years old, Cooper Roberts, he was paralyzed from the waist down when one of Bobby Cremo III's AR-15 bullets struck him. That little fella has already been through 7 surgeries. In 11 days, the little guy has been through 7 surgeries. And now he finds himself in what is described as very critical condition. He's breathing on a vent. He's running a fever, fluids building in his esophagus and his lungs and around his pelvis. And it looks, I so sincerely hope it's not true, but, you know, the NRA is about to add one more notch to their pistol. It's just sickening.
They're awful, awful human beings. Awful. It's an awful organization. It didn't start out that way. You know, it started out like, you know, for kids and trying to show.
No. Steve, the NRA started in the 19th century. It was started by a couple of Union Army Civil War veterans who noticed that the Union side didn't shoot nearly as well as the traitor side.
It was more of a safety thing. wasn't it, Robin? I mean,
yeah.
To how to properly use firearms. It didn't start out that way, did it? Am I wrong? Or?
Well, no, it started out as a marksmanship and gun handling club. It was started in New York, I think.
I have a reading tip for everybody. You can be an audiobook or paperback, but Malcolm Nance's new book, it's called They Want to Kill Americans.
When
he talks
Jeremy.
About Americans, hey, he's talking about your fucking neighbors. This book lays out how we got here in the 5 years of Trump. It's stunning how well it's done and how terrifying the things he says in it, because we all know they're true, how point blank he puts it in his own words. But it's a pretty good book.
Well, thanks for the reading tip, Jeremy. I appreciate that. I will definitely check it out. I know it's been getting a lot of hype on other radio shows, and rightfully so.
I'm about four chapters into it, and it's very well done. Even though it's not read in his voice by him, it's very well done. I'm impressed.
Oh. So it's on an audio format then?
Yeah, it's definitely on Audible. I got it last night on Audible.
Excellent. Excellent. Thank you.
Well, just to go back to little Cooper Roberts for one second. Damn it, he's got a twin. Little 8-year-old fella has a twin. And do the gun humpers of America care? Oh, hell no. No. Of course not. It's beyond my ability to express. Oh, and a couple of emails. Darlene asks, well, how on earth did all of this make national news in the first place? How was confidentiality violated? Yeah, I think it came through a tip from somewhere in Talibandiana. That's my understanding. And technically, her confidentiality has not been violated. We don't have name, date of birth, anything like that. But I would like to know how. And I guess Telemundo just worked in the community until they found out who it was. Lady B says another good website is sorryantivaxxer.com. Sorryantivaxxer.com. Vaxxer with two X's. I suppose it's true everyone will eventually get COVID, but there's no guarantee how mild it would be. Having had the vaccine makes recovery a bit easier, but it's the long-term effects that scare me. What's this going to do to us? Will it cause chronic issues? Will it shorten our lifespans? I know we can't spend our lives worrying about COVID. If we had taken control and stood firm, things might be better. It's not like we didn't have historical examples to give us guidance. No, sadly, Lady B, what we had was historical examples of America behaving exactly like we behaved in the COVID pandemic. Because we did the same damn thing with the dirty white Kansas pig farmer flu back in 1919. Lady B says, and we can't live in fear. It's exhausting. I'm among the few who still wears a mask everywhere I go. But more and more people don't care. They think it's over, at least for the summer. A lot of people don't care, and I'm not going to argue with them. I don't want to wear a mask anymore either. Sometimes I hate it. But until we get the all clear, I just don't want to take any chances. I've seen people on vents. It ain't nothing nice, darling. And if you survive that, you will never, ever be the same. Do what makes you happy. But if you're one of the folks who aren't afraid of death, just know that not being able to breathe is a scary and very painful way to go.
Drowning is next to fire is the most horrible way to go. So thank you, Lady B.
Yeah, I mean, there is a certain irony in the fact that I quit smoking in order to be able to start my transition. And I'm kind of an asshole about not wanting to die of not being able to breathe after I went through the misery of quitting smoking, thank you. You know, it was not easy.
No, it's not. putting down six.
Oh, and wait a minute. I just realized. Hey, let's see. Today is my 22-month anniversary without a cigarette. How about that?
Pretty hard, too. Yeah, I remember. I used to give you crap about that. You'd be like, Steve, stop it. Stop it. I'll quit when I'm ready to quit. I'm proud of you, Robert.
See, you didn't know what I knew.
Not at the time, no.
I knew what it was going to take to get me ready to quit. And nobody, you know, nobody can be forced to quit. Anybody. Whether it's tobacco, or booze, or pills, or coke, or...
You have to choose your own path, don't you, Robin?
You absolutely do.
Yep.
And while I'm while I maintain a certain skepticism about the 12 steps, you know, there's some good existential philosophy tucked away in there.
And if it works, God bless.
If it works, I'm so happy it did. I mean, I've got a friend who got his the 35-year citation, 35 years of sobriety, and I love him dearly, and I am so proud of him, and he has been such a blessing in so many other people's lives.
I don't know him at all, but I'm proud of him too. Good on him.
He's another one of those people that I consider my spiritual advisor.
I would like to add something from my personal experience vis-a-vis the smoking or not smoking thing. It's true what you said. Nobody can force you to quit. But I'm telling you from actual experience, sudden, unexpected chest pains will cause you to reconsider your position on the matter, which is exactly what happened to me in August of 99.
Well, that'll cause you a reevaluation, any near-death experience, whether it be pancreatitis, you know, you blow your sugar up too high. I mean,
a long-time two-pack-a-day smoker, and it happened to me with the chest pains, and it was just a transient thing, but I got on the phone, I talked to the doctor. The doctor said, come in for an EKG on the treadmill, which I did, and they didn't find any heart issues, but they said, you know, they didn't say anything, really. I mean, other than they always tell you to quit smoking and lose 20 pounds. But it occurred to me in the wake of that, in the immediate wake of that, don't be a fool for a minute longer. You've quit before. You know you can do it. Stop buying them and lighting them and inhaling deeply. Which is what that's the choice I made. It was like August 8th or 9th of 99. And I've not had a cigarette since. And it if I can do it, and Robin, you sound like a hardcore smoker like I was.
Scott.
I don't know the heck with
it. Now, to me, and y'all can weigh in on this, to me it was the mechanics of doing things with my hands.
Yes, absolutely. That was the... That was the worst part of it. I mean, every I was programmed. God, we're gonna sound like a meeting, aren't we?
And yeah. Really,
I was programmed. You know.
My name is Steve.
Can I get tell my story too?
Go ahead, Duncan. I want to hear it.
You haven't heard it before.
Well, it's always worth hearing again. It may help somebody. Go ahead, shoot.
Okay, in 2008, we had one of the worst fire seasons ever in Northern California. We had this one night, it was like in July, we had all these dry lightning storms, and it set off 1,200 forest fires. Well, the smoke started getting so bad in Redding where I was at, I was getting to the point where I was having a hard time smoking. Then the boss sends me all the way up in the mountains to this little town called Hayfork to put in a power pole for an electric gate on the airport. And the smoke was so thick up there, by 12:30, I could hardly breathe. And then I had to put a wet bandana over my nose and mouth on the drive back, and I had somebody else that was driving. By the time I got back there, I said, don't be surprised. I told the boss, don't be surprised if I call in sick tomorrow, because I think I'm going to be sick. And the very next day, I woke up and It was like I had a 300-pound weight on my chest. And I had to go to the doctor that day.
What did the doctor tell you, Duncan, that day?
Oh, he gave me a prescription for Shantex. And then I took the first dose of that or whatever, or one or two. Yep. But then it made me so wigged out that I just said, I can't do this. I had a burst reaction to it.
So you just put them down?
I just put them down after that. And that smoke was all around every damn day up until September.
So, dude, I still do. I quit in 1999. I still find myself occasionally when I get in a tight spot, reaching in my chest pocket, digging around for a cigarette. Are you all past that, or?
I am.
Good.
Shoot, if I go anywhere and I get anywhere near somebody that's smoking, I just grosses me out.
Good.
I got, it didn't take me too long to acclimate myself to being a non-smoker. Although for a long time, I would have dreams about smoking.
Mm-hmm. Well, I still do.
What dawned on me, fellow smokers, fellow former smokers, was really and truly, if I was going to be honest about it, the only cigarettes that I truly enjoyed were the first one with the first cup of coffee in the morning or one after a good meal.
Or after a good roll in the hay, too. Yeah.
Well, absolutely. I mean, come on. You can't smoke around a helium-filled sex doll. I mean, everybody knows that. For sure.
Said the monkey scratching his head.
But really, the longer I was a non-smoker, the more natural it became and the more sense I saw in the wisdom of my choice.
Yeah, for me, it was I kept a lighter and a separate pack of cigarettes in the cubby of the car.
Yeah, in that little change hole.
Oh, yeah. Right in front of the shifter. And the first thing I did before I hit start was grab a cigarette, light it up, start the car, roll the window down, seatbelt.
Robin, you were in the cigarette trail bad, man. I remember.
Oh, yeah.
I remember, friend. Yeah. You had it bad, but you beat it. So.
And I would knock down a half to three quarters of a pack of cigarettes during the course of this show.
Oh, yeah. Mostly lit and set down.
I smoked like a DJ.
Yeah.
You light it, you set it down, you look over and go, well, son of a gun. And you take the stub, make sure it's out, grab another one, light it, take a puff, set it down. But it was just part of the rhythm of life. But yeah, what you said about the ones you enjoy, the first one with a cup of coffee in the morning, pure bliss.
Yep. Oh God, yeah.
And
oh, yeah.
After a meal with a great big honking steak or something, yeah. And then there's the one that's that one, and then there's the one after dessert.
Yeah.
With the coffee again.
Yeah.
And then of course there's the old Rodney Dangerfield line. My wife and I have decided that we'll only smoke after sex. I'm down to one cigarette every 3 years, and she's up to six packs a day.
I don't get no respect.
No respect.
No respect.
Robin, I don't know if you remember, but I would give you grief.
Oh, I do. I remember. You got to quit smoking. You got to quit that, Robin. You got to quit that. You got to quit that.
Until finally you said, Steve, I don't goon on you about your drinking, nor would I. The lawyer in you came out, and I said, well, he's right. I just got to quit. Got to leave him alone. Leave her alone. And everything worked out.
But there was... Because all that time I was doing my due diligence, and every time I tried to read up about hormone replacement therapy, it's like, if you're a smoker, quit, because you run vastly increased risks if you're a smoker and you get on female hormones.
Yeah.
And so when I finally got my Planned Parenthood appointment, it was telehealth, they were like, do you smoke? And I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
Could you quit?
You gotta be honest.
Yeah, and I was like, do I need to quit? Well, yeah, I'm going to be disinclined to prescribe you hormones if you don't quit. I said, I quit.
You wanted it that bad.
Yeah.
Over the past 10 years, I've watched my best friend's paternal grandparents both die of smoking. One died 8 years ago of
emphysema,
cancer.
Jeremy.
Emphysema, esophageal cancer. Oh. And the weird part was his grandmother denied he got cancer from smoking. They had a small garage fire. And to the day she died, which was fucking yesterday, she said he died from the smoke inhalation from the garage fire, not the cigarettes.
And of course,
she just died yesterday with 20% heart left in her.
It's so awful under those circumstances, but I want to be careful not to ever be a true believer in regard to all of this. And by the way, I've got to get our buddy Ken up in Pennsylvania on the air. I'll just finish this and we'll hear from Ken. But
hello, Ken.
I don't ever want to be you know, one of those true believer zealots, proselytizers, whatever. Because the people who pick on smokers just piss smokers off.
Yeah.
And they will never get to where they need to be. My dad used to tell me a story about a 90 some odd year old guy lived down in town when he was young.
Just gonna go there. Yep.
And the good ladies of the Baptist church would hector that poor man day in and day out. You got to quit smoking. You got to quit smoking. That smoking and that drinking's gonna kill you.
It was that one off.
And then when he died at 99 or whatever, you know, there was two or three of those little old ladies left over, and they were like, see, we told him the smoking and drinking was going to kill him. We're still here.
He was that one-off. Yeah, we all know it. We read about it. We hear about it. We know these people. They smoke Camels all their life, shorts, and they live to be 100. But that's the one-off. That's the exception. It's not the rule.
No, not at all. Well, Ken, how are you, my friend? Sorry I kept you waiting so long.
No, that's fine. I was really enjoying this conversation because I've been a friend of Bill W. And there's a lot of wisdom there. But, you know, I didn't like hanging out with a bunch of dry drunks. It sucked. So, I'm not sure what to say about that. That was my opinion of it.
Again. You have a valid point.
And then quitting smoking is another vice that I have. Yeah, I'm definitely a handsy guy, so I miss the... I have to quit smoking because, you know, my life depends on it. I don't know if that caused it. I mean, who knows? Maybe it was coal ash in the air. I mean, who knows?
That's the thing. Considering all the other garbage that we breathe, we're just adding insult to injury, you know?
You got it way worse. I mean, I can imagine. But with, I live fairly near to Erie Coke plant. So, you know, burned coal and toxic. Before that, there was like handmill papers and that beautiful aroma of, shit, rotten eggs and some bubble gum thrown in. I'm gross.
Is that Erie, Pennsylvania that you speak of? Or?
Yeah. I'm right near the, pretty near there.
Gotcha, brother, gotcha.
Mm-hmm. We didn't reap the earth, scraping off mountains for, a couple inches of coal. Fuckers.
Is that what you're saying, or nobody's gonna...
Yeah, I do.
Well,
I do.
You'll quit when you're ready.
I do.
You'll Quit when you're ready. You'll find your way.
Thanks. But I think it maybe it's worse because it's both at the same time. I need to quit drinking. I don't know, Steve. You didn't know I had a stroke recently.
Sorry to hear that.
Gratefully, there's no really significant, you know, long term damage. I'm not a jeweler. My God, maybe next time it could be so. But it's okay, still hard.
Kind of go even hand in hand, you know.
Drinking coffee, drinking beer, drinking coffee, eating a piece of pie, and then you got to have that cigarette.
yes.
They're first one in the morning, and, you know, the really good ones are after sex. So, but hey, we'll leave it there.
Well, Ken, good hearing from you, man.
Well, it's good. Good to hear from you too. Hey, Robin. Can I talk to Robin? Or?
Yeah, right here.
Okay, here. I'm going to put up. I wanted to hit on Rico's challenge. I was going to call it halfway between me and you. But anyway, that's met. I'm going to put up 25. And I'll double it if it's met tonight.
Okay, so if we can do $25, if somebody will do $25, you'll double it. So that'll be $75, and that'll get us down to. That'll get us down to $825, and believe me, that's huge. Thank you, Ken. Thank you so much.
Yeah, for sure thing. Hopefully, it's not the usual suspects that. You know, a la carte contributors. But anyway, if it's met, I will do that. And I'll listen to the rest of the program. I love all you guys and girls. Sorry.
That's okay. It's generic, I guess.
No worries.
Yeah, it is.
Thank you, Ken. I hope you have a wonderful weekend.
You too, as well.
Well, thanks, Ken. I will I will announce it if somebody will meet it. So, thank you. Thank you very much. You take care. That's the halfway between me and you. I mean, halfway between Erie and here is Rico. So, Rico's challenge is met. Ken's is on the table. Talking, I don't know how we got into the smoking thing, but it's probably my fault. Lady B says, scare tactics never seem to work, but my 56-year-old sister started smoking at 17 and was up to 2 packs a day. She was diagnosed with COPD 5 years ago, still kept smoking. In December, she found out her heart valve was 90% blocked. She had surgery in February and still on oxygen. And the big reason why is because we're fucking smoking. Be annoyed, current smokers. Keep on playing with your lives. It's no fun suffocating to death, especially when you've got small grandkids. Truth.
Well, this, I've mentioned this before, but to some people it may still strike them as surprising. I used the, back in 1999, I used the Nicorette gum to quit. And then after the prescribed amount of time, I stopped chewing the gum. And then in the 90s, I was undergoing some really stressful stuff. And I said, boy, a cigarette would be good right about now. And then I slapped myself in the face and said, well, if you need nicotine that fucking much, at least get the gum and you don't have to light anything.
Orange-flavored gum, right?
No, I use the original. I like it.
Okay.
But I still, to this day, use the Nicorette because I like the nicotine, and that's probably bad for me. But by God, I gotta have something.
Beats the hell it beats the hell out of the tar and the carbon monoxide and the cyanide and the arsenic and everything else. But yeah.
And a few years ago,
I quit smoking. It seems like it was just days ago.
John Britovo.
Fresh in my memory, like I can't get it out. How in the hell y'all done? I've been listening to this for the last 50 minutes while I drive down the fucking highway.
I was just thinking about you, John.
How y'all doing?
So, wait, are you telling us you're a former smoker?
I am a, this is day four. Don't ask me about it. There are no sucking side effects. I don't believe in any of that shit.
I'm fine. I'm just standing over here. Just fine.
Jar of peanuts.
Picking the thorns off of roses.
It's day four.
But John, tell Robin why, because I don't think she knows yet.
She knows.
Okay, my bad.
No, it's wake up call and all that shit. Yeah, sometimes life just comes along and says, "Hey, fucking wake up, idiot."
And John, if you can make it through the third week, you're home for
3 weeks. It started out. People said, "Don't worry, John. 7 days. 7 days." Then last night in the chat, somebody said, 20 days. 20 fucking days."
No. Hold on. I got. For behold, I bring you glad tidings of great joy that shall be to John Britovo.
I heard you.
It takes 3 days to get the nicotine out of your system.
What is this jittery feeling I'm feeling, man? This ain't.
That's your brain, honey.
Oh, man. Yeah.
The nicotine's out of your system. You're not done jonesing for it.
Yeah, no, I'm not.
I think it's proprietary from individual to individual.
It is. It has been a struggle.
Well, no, the reason
I'm happy,
mentioned.
I'm breathing easier. I feel better.
Well, this is why I mentioned the 3 weeks. Once you get like 2 or 3 weeks under your belt, smoke-free, you begin to notice some of the benefits in the early stages of things tasting better and breathing more freely, sleeping better, waking up better.
I'm glad you mentioned sleeping better, because for the first time, and I am one of these people, I get up like 6:30. That's late. 7, I'm up. Today, I slept till 9:45 this morning, and my body needed it, I think. But I still woke up wanting a cigarette, but I didn't.
Well, and you know, you're not a. I mean, I always get the sense that you're a tall guy, but you're not a big guy, and so
tall and lanky.
You don't have you don't have to worry about I'm going to gain weight, because I get the notion you have to run around in the shower to get wet anyway.
Yep, run between the raindrops, baby. It rained today. I didn't get wet a bit. Oh, it did rain today. We're tickled to death. Anyway, enough about.
But I'm just today. I'm glad to know you're okay. And we got to do what we can to stay in this fight.
It can get a little stressful sometimes as we were speaking up, and that's how come And I don't want to jump off the boat here, but yeah, that's a big reason why you need to send in her support to Robin, because this shit isn't easy. And it's hard to do, and when you do it for nothing, and you're doing it for tips, baby. So I know Rob is behind in her funding. So if
just standing on the street corner with my harmonica box open.
That's funny you should say.
Not even a guitar case.
Funny you should say that. A friend of ours is currently right downtown in Corpus Christi at the Comic Con, and that's what he's got. He's got an ocarina. The good thing about it is he's very good at it. And, he's trying to raise him a few bucks. I seen him on the news, as a matter of fact, earlier. My wife, right when I walked in the door and came in here, she said, "Nick was on the news." A friend of my son's, who is a music teacher and is traveling around in a homemade school bus that turned into a van life. And, man, it did a great job of it anyway. It's how he gets gas money. He sit there and play a little music, get a little gas money, and go on down the road. He's having a great time.
Now, how does the ocarina differ in sound, tone, and quality from, say, a pan flute like Sam Fair used to play? Always looked like he was eating ribs to me, but he was playing music.
Wait a minute. Stop.
You know who you're asking that to?
Looked like he was eating ribs.
Anyway, are we getting back to saving the world?
We're trying real hard, and I got great news, because Ken's challenge just got met, and then some.
Thank you, Ken. Ken's challenge. Who met Ken's challenge?
That was our dear friends Kevin and Tracy up in Massachusetts. Thank you both. Thank you both. And yeah, let me do the cipher, and you talk. I'll cipher.
No, the only ocarina.
Get back to smoking number. I used to piss people off unmercifully
when I was leading trips for the Sierra Club, because I'd get up to the top of the pass, sit down, have a cigarette, celebrating the fact I'd just crossed over Forrester Pass, which is 13-2, or should I forget the one that comes into the Whitney General one, but it's up around 12. And I'd hike up the mountain, just beautiful, and pass all kinds of people on the trail, all that shit, sit down, smoke a cigarette. And people just were unbelievable that, I was able to do all that backpacking and smoking. Hell, when I was down in Peru, 12-5, living at Lake Titicaca, I smoked right through that, never had a problem with the altitude. I don't know what it was about my body, but I think I've been chewing gum for 2.5 years now.
I hate gum.
I tried the gum. I like the pouches a lot better.
Well, any gum. I don't chew any gum. Any gum. If you're not going to eat it, why are you chewing it?
Well, I never used to like chewing gum, but by God, it's the only thing that keeps me from going down to the corner store and buying another pack of cigarettes.
I'm telling you, I'm just eating everything in the freaking house.
Speaking of the gum,
because we didn't run out of peanut butter yet.
And John, don't dismiss the idea of using it temporarily, because the function that it gives is the difference between the dose of nicotine that you get from a piece of gum or a pouch. Right. Versus what you get from lighting up and inhaling deeply is the difference between the buzz of a beer and mainlining a shot of heroin.
So it kind of
tricks your brain into satisfying that need, but on a much lower level to get you over the hump. So if you need the gum, by God, go buy a box.
Well, I made this very perfectly clear to my Blue Dot family and everything. John has quit smoking cigarettes. John has not quit lighting things and sucking them into his lungs.
No, well, there's a... Yeah, right, exactly.
One place at a time here. One is helping get rid of the other right now.
And, you know, there's a big difference between, say, water vapor and smoke.
Right. Yeah, there's a big difference in my other habit than in tobacco. You know, I've known I've had to quit for a long time. And just like you were saying about, you know, I could smoke forever. And you think it, I never did think it's going to affect me. I recently have a heart CT scans on my lungs. Lungs look good. It's still, you know, emphysema. You know, got some COPD shit going on in there, but no cancer, and I'm lucky. But Monday morning was a different experience, and it brought it to light. And if I don't change my ways and do something better, then it ain't the cancer that's going to get my ass. It's going to be fucking. It's going to be a heart attack, and I'm, you know.
And you didn't like it.
I ain't done yet.
You know? No, hell no. We've got a country and a world to save, John.
Running again. Holy shit! You know what I told my wife? Because when Joe Biden got elected on inauguration day, you know, I shaved my beard off, and along with that came a change in my show where we took down the Trump T-shirt quilt that was behind me. I rolled up and put away all my Trump-hating T-shirts and put them away in a big box out in the storage shed. Told my son, go get the box. I'm not done yet. He's coming back, baby. But here's the deal. I really don't, you know, I'm playing in my mind what game he's playing here. Is he going to declare? Yes, he is. You bet your sweet ass there's money to be made, baby. He's going to declare. Is he going to be the candidate? Well, now that's going to be debatable. A lot of things could happen between now and then. We still got January 6th. We still got the hope that people are going to wake up and realize that he's a stinking lion, thief, con man, and all the other adjectives that we've ever thrown at his ass. And he won't get elected. But him getting elected, it won't be.
Well, but the thing is, John, if I may, if he's the nominee. And I think he's got a harder road to be the nominee because there's more people spouting his, you know, he was the only one spouting that MAGA horse shit in 2016.
He's not the only one now.
But he's not the only one now, and there are people who spout it better. And God, you know, if the man of Jell-O, Merrick Garland, will send a few of these little pricks off to jail for a while. you know, we like, as Scott and I were talking, we like to call it the G. Gordon Liddy experience.
Yeah.
Then
I'm waiting for some activity, some kind of fucking activity.
People might, you know, people might think twice, but the thing is, if he is the nominee, he will do the same shtick all over again and scream that the election was stolen. And here's here's the thing that, you know, this is the kitty in the ash heap. This case that's going to come before the Supreme Court next year, or next term, rather, may, you know, it may provide what he needs to nullify votes.
Yes.
In key states. Because, see, yep. I mean, this much is true. Nitwit Nero will carry Talabama. Nitwit Nero will carry Mississippi Stan and Arkansas Stan, unless Tom Cotton runs. But Florida is not a lock anymore. And, you know, maybe the weirds in California will find a weird they like more. And I'm not talking about California being generally weird. I'm talking about the maggots.
Yeah.
And he needs those big delegate, big population states.
Did everybody catch the fact that his old plane that had been sitting at the runway for the last 4 years has been pulled into a hangar, repainted, and is being retrofitted and put back as Trump Airline? Not Airlines, not a... but his own private plane is being readied to be serviceable and will be ready in 3 to 6 months.
I've been saying it for a while. He's not out there holding political rallies. He's out there holding rallies to rally an army. Robin's right. Doesn't matter about the vote in 24. If he's on the ticket, he won. He won. That's it. And if he didn't, it's because the Democrats cheated. And here we go again. So I think we're in a situation where either we deal with this shit now or we deal with it in 24. I would prefer to deal with it now, right now. Let's get on with the Department of Justice. Let's see some fucking charges made, because we are all witness now to what happened. We can't turn a blind eye and say we don't know. We've seen the news. We've seen the hearings. We've seen the evidence. We've heard witnesses. We know who he is. We know who Mark Meadows is. We know who Jim Jordan is. We know who these people are. So if I'm supposed to believe in truth, justice, and the American way, baby, show me some of the justice part. Because if we don't do it now, and people are saying, oh, if you charge him, oh, my God, the maggots are going to... I don't give a fuck about what the maggots do. I'm more concerned with what our country does. This country is not made of maggots. It's made of citizens, patriots that are willing to stand up. And when I say stand up, and I mean with your voice and your vote, the two fucking weapons that we have that they can't do a goddamn thing about.
And if we're going to have a civil war over him, let's have it now.
Let's
not
do it now. I don't want to wait until the presidential election is on the line again. I want this issue resolved now. I don't want to wait 2 more years during investigations while we keep spouting out and giving him a free fucking microphone out there. Because he's a candidate for presidency and he's being investigated, he'll be in the news all 24/7. That's all you'll hear. I want to see part of the justice part. I want to see charges brought against those that deserve it. And in my book right now, Mark Meadows top of my list right now beside Donnie.
Yeah, Mark Meadows, back. Donnie. I'd like, you know, Roger Stone, Alex Jones,
Kevin McCarthy, Mitch McConnell,
Scott Perry,
yeah,
Lauren, Marjorie Taylor Greene,
every one of those Congress creeps that was in that December meeting,
after the December 18th shit. When that night when Mike Pence told him, "No, I ain't doing this shit," Donnie sent out his "Let's Get Wild" TikTok thing. Well, guess what the next meeting was? Those bunch of fucking congressmen that got together in that office and decided to start spreading the world. How are we going to do this? How are we going to overturn the election? They fucking knew they lost, but they all conspired to sell the big lie back home, to rile up the people, baby. Get them ready for January 6th, man. We got to go. hold those fucking people accountable. That's what this country needs to do.
John,
that's why I'm
not just that, John. Hold the billionaires who funded that shit accountable, because it was the whole reason for January 6th. Yes, they tried to overturn government, the government of the United States. It was a coup. It was a putsch. It was a terrorist attack. But it was done for one thing and one thing only: profit. Get the goddamn billionaires. That grocery, the grocery store heiress from Publix, put her behind bars.
Telling you. Now you're seeing you're talking about the big picture. The big picture of what the Republican Party is doing, baby. No, this isn't about freedom and all that bullshit that they wave the flag and sell the Bible for and all that crap. This is about profit. Corporations making money. The Republican Party has been nothing but the party of big corporations and big money, baby. Everything from big tax cuts to getting rid of regulations to streamline business. Man, grease those wheels. Let's make some more money. Fuck the environment. Fuck everybody.
The Republican Party is a criminal conspiracy.
It is a fascist organization, baby. And they court theology just to get the masses involved, to feed the fucking sheep. To get them riled up and point the socialists about, look at them people, they're trying to give you a free meadow to eat in. Fuck you. We need to do this, baby. If you're a Democrat, if you're independent, if you're a fucking Republican that still has a heart for this fucking country, then you stand your fucking ass up and you run that people like him out of your fucking party. You want to show me that you're a Republican and that you're a patriot? Then turn your back on that shit, because you know who he is and you're willfully participating in it. I said today, if I see any of my neighbors out there still spouting this shit about, oh, Trump's a good guy, in my mind, in the picture, right above his head is the word fucking traitor.
Hey, John, I do have some good news for you.
We all need good news.
The thing that'll make the scenario different for Trump in 24, should he declare his candidacy, different from 2016, is this time around, he's got a boatload, a shitload, a metric shit ton of legal issues that are going to encumber him. And the Republicans can get the Trump effect at this point, even by not using Trump, because as Robin noted, there are a lot of Trump echo chambers who are just itching to run in 24. Tom Cotton, maybe Lindsey, maybe
Ron DeSantis is down there running.
DeSantis. Yeah. I mean, and if they're queuing up this early in the process, you know there's a bunch more of them.
Hell, if I was that Ron,
that's because they see that the old lion is bleeding.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Step up and kicking.
Yeah, they can get all the benefits without the baggage, leaving him out of the picture, as opposed to letting him do a Lyndon LaRouche and run a fucking campaign from a jail cell somewhere.
Let him stay in there and split that ticket, baby. I want to rub Republicans' face right in Trump's shit every day.
And they're either knowingly or unknowingly creating the circumstances of their own party's destruction if they keep going down that road. And I say let them. If that's going to bring about the fall of the grand old party, then let's see that happen.
That's where I'm at. This is, to me, this is not only a fight for democracy itself, the way we conduct our business here, baby. This is a battle within the Republican Party to define who the hell you are. Because right now, what you're selling to us, you're a Klan. You worship a king, a man, not an ideal.
A cult. A cult.
From the word go. Baby.
And see, John, and Scott, just to, you know, not to just work this to death, but the fact of the matter is, this transmogrification of the Republican Party has been going on for a while. I mean, the Republican Party that ran against Truman in 48, that ran Eisenhower in 52 and 56, was already changing by the time they nominated Dick Nixon in 60.
Yeah, this ain't Barry Goldwater's party.
And 64 was the Republican, at that point in time, people were looking at the Republican Party with their mouths agape. You know, their candidate for president was running on a let's start a nuclear war option. And, you know, closer to home and nearer to our own memories, you know, the teabaggers in 2010.
Yes. That's who they are.
And the teabaggers just morphed in. All Nitwit Nero did was come along and co-opt the teabaggers. He's not a political genius. He is an opportunist who knows when he senses when the moment is right to step in and take credit for somebody else's work.
And hence, the first thing he did was come out and say, "Oh, you know, he's born in Kenya, and we ought to challenge his birth certificate." That fed right into that Tea Party, the whole freaking nine yards of that shit, and he just rode that wave of bigotry, hatred, and racism right into the White House. Doesn't that say a lot about our country? But we rose up. That's the part that I want everybody out there remembering. We came back. We said, "Oh, holy shit, look at this. He really got in." We suffered through 4 years of that shit. But in the first 2 years, we took control, baby. We came back in the midterm, and we took the House and the Senate. And then we came back and beat his ass until we threw his ass out. Well, guess what? We're not done. This is 22 now. We're in the midterms. This is the fucking deciding factor. If you return this shit to the Republicans in the House and the Senate, guess what, baby? It's priming the fucking pump.
Well, and John, let me ask you about this, because this is important. I mean, I started out the program kind of gooning on Biden for this trip to the Middle East.
I was listening.
It's not.
Listen to the whole show tonight, bro.
It is. Well, thank you.
And kudos to Lady B. That first email she sent, I listened to that. Knocked it out of the fucking ballpark. Kudos to her, baby. She's a smart woman.
Oh, everything is just home run derby for Lady B. I mean, you know, they have the home run derby before the All-Star game, and somebody stands up there and just lobs. You know, lob softballs, and they just, you know, designed to be parked right in the seat. And Lady B just stands up there, and, you know, cheap seat, cheap seat, cheap seat, just knocks it out of the park in that thin Colorado air.
I listened to that first email that she sent in, and that just, it said it all. I wish I was that articulate on my feet.
Don't mess with those janitors.
And the thing is, she doesn't need easy pitches lobbed over.
She'll hit it where it's pitched.
But
the question that I was going to raise, John, is I'm seeing more and, you know, Joe Biden isn't even 2 years into his presidency, and our side is already falling all to pieces.
You know,
and it drives me bananas because, you know, all this, and you know, I guess it sells ads or whatever, but who will the Democrats run in 2024? You know, Biden's going to be too old.
It doesn't matter what venue you go to. You can go to MSNBC, which is left-leaning, and turn on the fucking thing and look at the headline and says, "Well, Joe Biden's an asshole." You know, I agree with you today when you spoke about him going to Saudi Arabia. Nothing could piss me off more than that fucking move, going to see Slice and Dice. This is bullshit. I've said it for fucking years. That's going to come back and bite us on the fucking ass. I do not like our relationship with Saudi Arabia. On the grand scheme of world events, we know why we're there. And on the home front, we know we're getting beat over the fucking head every day in the news with, "Oh, inflation, look how much you're paying for gas. That's Joe Biden's fault." Fuck you. If a president could afford, could affect gas prices, we'd all be paying a nickel, people. You know, it's bullshit.
Hear, hear. Wait a minute.
Yeah. No, if a president could fucking do it, they'd be paying us for gas.
Yeah. Free gas.
That's not the fucking way it works, but we're going to beat his over the fucking head because of gas prices. And by the way, corporate America found out, "Hey, what? Gas prices went up. Hey, Bob, raise the prices on everything. George, raise it up." That's the way it goes in this country, baby. You get the smell, the sniff of the possibility of making some more profit. Guess what the oil companies did, baby? Wham! Go check out their profits, baby. You think that this...
I know, and there was America walking around with a little jingle in their pocket because of the pandemic, because Democrats tried to make sure that they didn't starve to damn death. And so corporate America's like, "Well, how can we get, I mean, we got more than they got, but we want what they got." You know, it goes back to a bumper sticker that we used to give away years and years and years ago. It showed a pig in a top hat. And it was just a slogan that I came up with, in conversation here. They want it all. They want it all.
Damn, we should have said that in unison.
I'm just remembering that old thing, when Republicans fucking get in line and they all line up behind one guy and they're all going to march in the same fucking direction while we form circular fucking files or what. We pick ourselves off. We find more fault within ourselves than we, we have a target in front of us, a big one. An actual threat to the democracy that we hold dear. Ben Franklin, a democracy, a republic, if you could hold on to it, well, guess what, baby? It's in the ends of our fingers, baby. And we're going to sit around and beat our old man over the head, try to challenge his. He is doing a damn good job. I think the best job that he could possibly do in the situation that was dumped on him from the previous fucking Republican, which is what an over-recurring theme with Republicans. They come in, they kick the fucking trash can over, steal everything in the house, shit on everything, and walk out the door and leave it for a Democrat to come by and try to clean up. And guess what? We're here in the cycle again. Here we are. So is Joe Biden doing the best job that I wish he could do? No. Do I wish he could do better? Yes. Do I wish we had a Democratic Party that acted a whole lot like the Republicans and said, fuck you, we don't give a shit really what you think. We're going to fucking do away with the filibuster. We're going to take what we want. We're going to do this, that, and the other, and then make progress. That's not the way we're going to do it.
Want people in the Senate, not 48.
Say, this shit's not easy when you're passionate about it, is it, Robin?
No, it's not. And, you sit around all day long trying to figure out just exactly where the piss, where the pissed offness is going to take you. And, yesterday I saw that story about every Republican in the House voting against looking for Nazis in the military. Like, you dirty bastard, don't you ever show up on Memorial Day or Labor Day again. You rotten pricks.
They were in there today, Wednesday, at the memorial for that 98-year-old war veteran.
Yeah.
All of them kicked their chair over.
And
you know, one of my best TikTok videos I've done since I went on TikTok went like, I don't know, I think it's like about 300,000. I have one at 800. Anyway, was one when I made the fucking comment with passion that if you're flying your fucking American flag in front of your house and you're still supporting this motherfucker, guess what? You're not a fucking patriot. Fuck you. Take the flag down. You're embarrassing yourself.
Well, yeah, it's like with Dobbs. I want to see every church full to bursting with all these Christians that want to take away that have taken away rights from the women of this country, and I want to see them sitting in those pews with about 15 adopted children, most of whom aren't white.
No. Them babies is already born. I don't give a shit about them babies. Them babies are already breathing air. Throw them over there on the trash pile of humanity. And
I want more Ayanna Presleys. I think one of the big takeaways that we were talking about earlier in the program, Joe Biden has the progressives in the Congress to thank. And the people who have made his life miserable, the people who have stood in his way, have been the people who are centrists like he is. Or was, the Bernie is not standing in Joe's way in the Senate. Centrist Joe Manchin is.
Is. No, I don't make it any calls.
AOC is not standing in the way of Joe Biden in the House of Representatives. This Gottheimer shitbird is. And by the way, I've got an AOC. I don't know if you saw this, John, but I mean, this just turned my stomach when I ran across it. AOC was simply walking down the stairs of the Capitol the other day. And yeah. Lo and behold, they call him a right-wing provocateur.
Right-wing provocateur.
Down here in the hills, we'd just call him an asshole.
Oh, I know them guys.
And his name is Alex Stein.
Yeah.
And the minute he saw AOC, he started his video. And in his video, he yelled, "Look at that booty on AOC. Woohoo, I love it, AOC. Hot, 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 like a tamale."
Really?
And he said, and she's still she's trying to kill Baze, but she still looks hot. Something like that.
Yeah, and nobody went over and Richard Spencer'd him.
I'm sure he's a...
I don't know what the laws of D.C. are like, but those are fighting words. That is a verbal assault.
Actually, she did. Her assistant stopped her.
God.
Well, she walked over like she was going to take him down, and her aide was like, no. And she said later, "It's just a bummer to work in an institution that openly allowed this, but talking about it only invites more. It's just really sad."
Well, the guy that you mentioned, Mr. Stein, is probably there with press credentials, which is the office on the House side that issues the press credentials.
I mean, I've got this filth queued up, but I'm not going to play it. I mean, this is not free speech.
It's a one thing to cover Congress. It's another thing to be a shit stirrer there for no other reason but to insult and denigrate a sitting member of the House of Representatives. And if you're getting away with that because you've got press credentials, I mean, that, and what stairway was that? Was that in a House office building?
No. You know, the stairs that come down out of the House of Representatives at the Capitol outside.
Right. Okay, all right. Because I didn't see that. This is new news to me.
I think about so many things. You know,
I'm just sitting here shaking my head to the thought of
it. How proud is this Alex Stein's mama? But what's even more sickening is there are millions of Americans who are like, "Yeah, you do it, man. Why don't you grab her ass?" Fuck your feelings. You know, this is what happens when you get a president who says, "Grab them by the pussy."
That's it. Mm-hmm. It's acceptable, baby, to them, whilst they hold their Bible and wave their flag.
And he also has a video where he's interrupting like a city council meeting. Like saying, no, actually, he's not interrupting. He's speaking. He's like, give me the vax. He's doing this stupid song. These people are just so boring.
Yeah, he thinks he's like some right-wing Borat or something. He went up to Representative Jamal Bowman from New York, and he said, "Do you think Hunter Biden has good taste in prostitutes?"
I don't know. How much is your mother charge?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I wait for people to say shit.
I paid your mama $1.25 last night.
Yeah, I think she owes me change.
She owes me change.
I gave her a Yelp. It doesn't sound too good.
Well, I got to roll out of here. We're a little over time, and with the White Rose Society being down.
Well, before she runs out the door, y'all remember that her guitar case is still laying there on the concrete right in front of her.
Thank you, John. It is. It's a harmonica case, but yes.
It's a big harmonica.
Actually, it's an accordion case, and since I had the accordion case there, somebody brought me an accordion to put in it.
Your voice is only here because of your donations. That's why you hear Robin's voice. That's why you hear this conversation go on every week. And we all know we learn a little something from it. So it's worth it, baby.
Thank you, John. It's true. I had a note from Shorty in L.A., she said, "Give to the horn. Robin's not like mainstream media. She's not MSNBC, CNN, or like other women, any other woman that has effing talking points from corporations. There are no commercials. She's way better, and she's the real deal."
I try
real hard to keep it real. Shorty, thank you for noting that. And John, I'm glad you're okay. I'll be sending you all the good vibes as you move from day four to, and you know what, at first, I mean, you remember, I was on Facebook, "Hey, today's 1 week, today's 2 weeks, today's a month,
today's four."
I haven't said that forever, and then I just looked up and said, son of a gun, this is 22 months.
I heard you say that, it was 22 month anniversary.
And
I was listening, Robin.
I know. That just tickles me so much. Is the family okay?
Family's fine. Everybody's doing fine on their toes, trying to keep Dad alive and all that shit. So that's the main thing around here I got to deal with.
Well, please give them all my love and tell them.
I will.
I mean, y'all live in my heart. You know that.
In yours and ours. So,
this
family grows. The Blue Dot family, the Horn family. There's just so many good people in this group that it's worth everything that we put into it, Robin. Worth every bit of it. If we didn't make a dime, we'd still be doing it. And a dime is all we're making nowadays. So make that donation.
Getting that Baptist dime under the coffee cup.
Yeah. Played around a little bit.
Yeah. Thank you to Debbie. Thank you so much. We are. Let's see. Let me do the end of program ciphering. We got down to 8:15. 8:15. No. I'm wrong.
Wait a minute. I got my toes out.
I can't count past 10 anymore. Shouldn't have said that.
The ballpark figure. It's still coming in.
I really want to get this right, and I'm so confused. We got on down to 775, including what Debbie just sent along. 775. So
that means
come Monday we're at 1075. If we were to bring in like $76 more, at least we wouldn't have $1,000 fundraising goal come Monday.
And we still got how many minutes left?
None.
We still have to say goodbye.
There's still the credits.
There's still the credits.
you are the eternal optimist, John Bredevoe. Thank you.
We have to be, baby. We have to be. It's what motivates us through this shit. We have to believe in it.
Here.
Take care. I love you.
Love you too, my friend. Love you all. It's been a wonderful conversation. We went all over the place. I'm glad we had a little 12-step meeting over smoking cigarettes. Thanks to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Y'all were wonderful this evening. Thank you. Thank you to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staffs. Thank you, Steve and Sparky. Thank you so much. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Head on .live. Remember, brand new fresh Malloy on the way, 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. Roughly a little over a half hour away. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is Head on .live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Oh, Ben Birch, I'm sorry for the crap you're having to put up with at WhiteRoseSociety.org. And I have all the faith in the world in you. You will get this knocked out. I know. I trust. I believe. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women, the folks of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. I wanted to mention there was a fascinating article at Grist today, or recently. It's a lengthy piece, and it deserves reading. Grist, GRIST.org. It's by Eve Andrews. What happened to the war on coal in West Virginia? The activism spotlight has left the Coal River Valley, but when the battlefield is your home, you don't give up the fight. It's a really good piece, and it talks about the history of when mountaintop removal stopped being sexy enough for all the activist attention. And it's a damn good read, grist.org. And of course, Coal River Mountain Watch is now a proud union shop, and we are tiny, but we do amazing things, like the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, HR 2073. It's in the House. It needs your support. It needs grassroots support all over the country. It needs to get out of the House in this Congress so we can at least make Joe Manchin do the dirty business that Joe Manchin does. please, like Steve was saying, get your boosters. Be fully boosted. Wear your mask. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Maintain your social distance. And if somebody's coming towards you and says, "Ooh, look at that booty! AOC got a booty!" Avoid that toxic little maggot right-wing Republican turd like the plague, because he is. Have a great weekend, everybody. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.